the sounds of the 2016 Chicago Cubs Victory Parade, the Week in Review with Amy Guth and Scott Smith, and a wrap-up of the baseball season with Mark Carmen. And now here's your host, a man who is working on a reggae version of Go Cubs Go, Justin Kaufman.
Now that I'd listen to, right? I mean, it's got to be better than what we got. Folk and country played out. Reggae? I'm listening. Good evening, everybody. It's The Download with you till 11 o'clock tonight here on 720 WGN. What a day, November 4th, 2015. Amazing, right? I mean, what an amazing day. A victory celebration for the Chicago Cubs. Millions of people in downtown Chicago, even in Wrigleyville as well. I mean, it really was something to behold and to appreciate and be involved in here in the city of Chicago, regardless of your status and whether or not that you're a fan of actual the baseball team that's being celebrated. It was truly something to behold here in Chicago. We'll talk about it tonight. And it kind of mentioned with Roe just a second ago, the idea that this is much more than a baseball story. It's a story about family. It's a story about generations. It's a story about community, people coming together and almost honoring the people who couldn't be here today. And we'll talk about that with fans all around Chicago today as we sort of bring you the sounds of the 2016 Cubs Victory Parade along Michigan Avenue, Wrigleyville, and, of course, Grant Park. Also, it's time for Reload. It's Friday, so we look back at the week that was. I always say, what story is going to be remembered in 50 years, 100 years, 500 years from now? I don't know. So hard. What story? I wonder. So I've got a bonus question, which is what was your favorite human interest story when it came to the Chicago Cubs this week? So we'll talk with Scott Smith, who'll be in studio, as well as Amy Guth. We'll go over the stories, the winners, the losers, underreported, overreported. Obviously, we're going to talk about the Cubs, but also big stories as the election draws near. Also talk Mark Carmen. He'll be in studio. We'll talk about the Cubs season as we wrap up and think about some of the things that are coming in the short term, the hardware situation, Cy Young MVP, but also about this Cubs team and what it means for next year and the next and the next and the next. Mark Carmen will be in studio. He is also covering tonight's return, triumphant return, Derrick Rose and Joakim Noah, who are at the UC. The game's underway. News, weather, and traffic with Rob Martier tonight. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman, and this is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. All right. Why don't we do this? We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll do the carryout. Sound good? Stay with us. All right. It's The Download here on 720 WGN Radio. Got a great show for you lined up tonight. Why don't we start it off with the carryout? This, of course, our nightly segment where I read the news to you at home. You don't have to. Here are today's top stories. Supposedly there was a parade and rally downtown. I saw a lot of Cubs gear on Michigan Avenue, but just figured it was half off at the tchotchke store to make room for the D-Wade merch. The Cubs held their victory rally downtown, and approximately 5 million fans were in attendance. So that's unbelievable. The city was alive with Cubby Blue all the way down to the river, which was dyed blue for the festivities. Although there is some irony in dyeing water blue. But it looks cool and, frankly, natural. Yeah. Oh, so that's what the Chicago River's supposed to look like. Got it. The Cubs didn't disappoint as the players looked on from trolleys at a sea of fans along Addison and Michigan Avenue in true disbelief. And the fans, they were truly excited, cheering for everyone on the parade route, from buses of executives to the police and ambulances that flew by. Even a truck with porta-potties got a Go Cubs Go. The rally was more subdued on TV, though. Miking issues feel like the whole audience didn't get that huge sound. But at Hutchinson Field, it was loud. Pat Hughes read off everyone's name except the politicians, of course. Both Governor Bruce Rauner and Mayor Rahm Emanuel were on stage but didn't get introduced. Hey, if you're going to be the leader of the state or city, take your booze. What kind of example are you setting for the kids? Step up and take the booze. It's ridiculous. You don't cower in the back. No, I'm just standing here. I'm just a governor. No, it's all good. Next week's my week. Then Rizzo cried. Ross got his country buddy to sing Go Cubs Go for the 1 millionth time. No money for balloon drop. And then Chicagoans from near and wide walked into a commuter nightmare known as a train ride home. Yep. This afternoon, trains were packed and platforms were overcrowded, and the pictures looked like scenes right out of I Am Legend, where everyone's just trying to get off the island. World champs? More like World War Z champs. Yikes. The expressways were no different. Didn't help that the Ike was shut down for a considerable amount of time after a shooting investigation. Whoever shot at a car today, double the punishment. Parade rally day is like a construction zone. Any crime, double the fine. Right? Good. It was a tough commute, but hey, the last time this happened, it was horse and buggy time, and there was more than blue dye in the water. You know what I mean? Gross. Like cholera gross. But what a ride and what a day. It's still going on. Michigan Avenue is like a semi-drunk war zone, and I think we have an official smell for the Cubs rally. I got a contact high just walking to Walgreens. And to think, now the Cubs season is over, and we can finally focus and concentrate on all the political commercials running before the election. Wait, who's who and what about sex and rape and abortion and raising money for Trump and slash or taxes? I'm so confused. Please stop making me turn off primetime commercials when my kid is watching. Cool? And frankly, I can't tell who's running for what. I want to get into the polls, and I'm going to realize that all these names that were bandied about, they were just for water reclamation or something. I have no idea who's running for what. In weather, Ronnie Santo and Ernie Banks must have gone to weather court in heaven today to get an injunction for this parade. It's beautiful. It can be cold after the weekend, but not before. In sports, the Cubs, well, yeah, just checked. Still World Series champs. That's good. Now we wait for the hardware. Who's going to win NL Cy Young, NL MVP? How about NL Manager of the Year? Honorary award for Ronnie Woo Woo? Maybe give John Hamm a raspberry for wearing that Cardinals hat? And I know we'll have plenty of time to talk about next year, but what about next year? Parade's over. Get back to work. Dexter, free range Fowler, free agent. So will the Cubs re-up? And what's the deal with Arrieta's contract? Is he worth the same as what he was asking for last year? And what about Aroldis Chapman? Does the Fireballer stay or does he sign elsewhere? Theo, put down the Bud Light. Time to get back to work. Tonight, the Bulls host the Knicks at the UC, and that means the return of D. Rose and Joakim Noah. The Bulls played a tribute video to start the game, which I think will be an infomercial for Rush Orthopedics. For the first 5,000 fans, the UC should just hand out knee braces and combs. That's pretty much it. That's their legacy. Anyway, go D-Wade, go Butler. You can't let the Knicks win tonight, right? You can't let them. I mean, I kind of hope there's a fight. Is it too early for a good old-fashioned basketball fight? Whatever happened to those? Oh, right, they were replaced by kicks to the groin. That's the new basketball fight. Blackhawks decided to keep the sports mojo moving with a 4-game win streak. They won last night, and they're clicking early. So maybe, just maybe, we don't have to wait that long for another victory parade. Yeah, I just jinxed it. And the Bears, the 2-6 record, may not be the only way to gauge this team's first half. Yeah, it is. Analysts are pointing out that statistical improvements have happened on the defense from last year. So essentially, now they're just giving out ribbons like they do at a Little League banquet. For the team that shows the most spirit, the Chicago Bears. Maybe you shouldn't play sports. And finally tonight, if today's numbers are correct, 5 million plus fans. The Cubs parade and rally would be the 7th largest human gathering in history, just edging out a Rod Stewart concert in Brazil. So not only are we World Series champs, but hey, we beat Rod Stewart! Finally. That's the carryout for November 4th, 2016. Tonight, we're dyeing all of our food blue. So who wants a blue and red pizza? Blue and red hot dog? A blue and red beef sandwich? Yeah, sorry on that last one. That just means the meat's turning. Yeah. All right, coming up, we will have sounds of the 2016 Cubs Victory Parade out and about all morning long. We put together a little tribute for you. That'll be coming up right after the news. And, of course, the week that was with Scott Smith and Amy Guth. Stay with us. 720 WGN. All right. How we doing, Rob Martier? What a day, buddy.
Oh, man. Plenty of happy humans out there, eh?
Ain't that the truth,
absolutely,
man? It was pretty crazy, man, being out there today. There's just so many people. And I wonder, I mean, you might know, but... like, has everybody made it home, or is there still, like, a scene at the old Ogilvies and the Metro stations and the Union stations and what have you?
I think it was kind of Disney-esque, you know, how you kind of line up for Space Mountain, and they say it's 45 minutes from this point, but it's really 30. Because Mrs. Oh, really? Rob was at Ogilvie Station, we take the Northwest line, and she quickly shot me a picture saying, look what I'm standing in. I can't believe it. Well, then about 15 minutes later, she goes, oh, I got to go. So she got on the train. Now the train ride itself was long because they were doing double stops because the trains were so long.
Right.
So they had to let the front half off, then the back half off. But she eventually made it home. She's fine.
There you go. Well, all right, there you go.
Nothing that a little gin and tonic won't cure, you know what I mean?
every car's a drinking car tonight, my
friend. Yeah.
Do they still play the blues in Chicago when baseball season rolls around? When the snow melts away, do the Cubbies still play in their ivy-covered burial ground? When I was a boy, they were my pride and joy. But now they only bring fatigue to the home of the brave, the land of the free, and the doormat of the National League.
Here's the 0-1. This is going to be a tough play. Bryant, the Cubs win the World Series! Bryant makes the play! It's over! And the Cubs have finally won it all! 8-7-10.
Welcome back to the download here on 720 WGN. Today, the city of Chicago hosted millions of Cubs fans for a victory parade and rally. From Wrigley Field to Michigan Avenue to Grant Park, fans celebrated something that hasn't been done, well, in recent Chicago history. The Cubs, World Series champs. Today's about the fans. And honestly, about celebrating something different. Celebrating happiness. Something that we don't do much in this day and age. And fans came together from neighborhoods, suburbs, regions, and coasts to share in something, to share in someday. And today was that day. They lined up early in Wrigleyville and along Michigan Avenue to get a glimpse of our modern-day heroes to show their support for the men in blue. And here are some of those sounds we collected from fans along Michigan Avenue on this day, November 4th, 2016, the day we celebrated the Chicago Cubs.
Rob, let me talk to the GM man.
All right, you're a Cubs fan. What is it about? I mean, how does it feel to be standing on Michigan Avenue getting ready for a World Series parade?
This is the most amazing day of my life. I have really been looking forward to this I'm 47, and my granddaddy used to watch the Cubs. So I wish he was here, but it is amazing, amazing. I am just elated. I am just ready to enjoy myself. Go Cubs!
So much has been made about family, about generations being able to watch the Cubs. I mean, it's an emotional time because this is the first time this has happened for so many people.
So many people. 108 years we waited for this. All what they say wasn't going to happen is happening today. Today. So it's the time to enjoy ourselves and let's root our Cubs on. And next year we're going to go to the World Series again. Yes!
You know, for you, I mean... Think about all those years that it didn't happen and you kind of come back and you keep coming back. Like, talk about the emotion that goes into being a Cubs fan.
It is very emotional. It's ups and downs, cries, highs and lows, like at the game 7. I was working. It was 6-3. 2 minutes later, it was 6-6. My heart fell out of my stomach. It just dropped. It was like, really? Oh, my God. And then I was like, okay, I'm going to pray. We're going to do this. I still believe. If they waited till I got off of work, rain delay. Thank you, God. Thank you. And guess what? We win. Yay! I'm excited. I'm just so excited.
So here we are, I mean, on Michigan Avenue, and in just a matter of moments, all these trolleys are going to go by, all the players, the managers, all the families. I mean, how do you soak this moment in?
I'm still like in awe. I'm like, really? This is the day. This is really happening. I don't know how I'm going to soak it in, but I'm taking it all in. And something that I can tell my grandkids and something that I can talk to my husband about, something that I can talk to my friends about. If you're not here, this is the place to be today. Get down here because it's time. Yo!
Thank you.
Come on, Cubs.
I saw them lose so many times. I'm just super excited to be here, and I made my husband bring me down today. We just lost his mom and my aunt and many family members who aren't here to see it this day, so that's the sad part.
What does it mean to be on Michigan Avenue to watch a Cubs World Series parade?
awesome.
108 years of history and all of our parents and grandparents waiting for this, so we want to celebrate all together.
My dad and my grandpa both passed away, never got to see anything like this. And to see it with my son and my daughter is the coolest thing ever.
Well, we're just recent transplants. We've only been here since the first of the year. So we've waited all year for this. So we're pretty excited.
We figure we broke the curse. We brought them good luck.
Well, I have been waiting a very long time. I won't say how old I am, but it's been many years. So to see this young team do as wonderful as they have, and they're so, the word I'm trying to say, down home. They're a really nice group of young men. And I'm thrilled for the city and my husband, who's waited a long time with cancer. And this is his thrill. So if he wanted to see one thing more, he wanted to see the Cubs win. And it's an honor to be here.
Just a great thing for the city, too. It's so exciting to see maybe 2 million people for this for the parade. And it's a great day.
What do you think? I mean, you're standing on Michigan Avenue right now. What's it mean to you that there's a Cubs World Series parade?
Justin, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm super excited. I'm super jazzed. I was born in Wrigleyville and waited 48 years. And this eclipses any Hawks, any Bears, any Sox, anything in the past. And it's good that we've got good weather and the crowd is happy and calm. Nobody's getting crazy drunk. And my crew and I have been out since 5 in the morning, and we're having a good time.
It means so much, and the city will never be the same. You know, I don't think it will be. And I think we're going to be back next year.
Nashville, Tennessee.
Nashville, Tennessee. What brings you to Chicago?
We used to live here. Woohoo! Cubbies!
So you came back for this?
Yes, just for this. Yep.
What is it about living, live in Nashville now, what is it that brought you back to Michigan Avenue to be able to watch this parade?
108 years. Didn't want to miss it.
What does it mean to be here right now as a Cubs
fan? So much. I've been a Cubs fan for over 30-something years. And I was even at the Bartman game. So the other night, I got a little nervous when they tied it up. But I think everybody cried. It was just a fantastic thing for the city and for all the Cubs fans in the world.
This team is phenomenal. Joe Maddon, I think he was the best hire ever. And we just love the team. They play so well together. Goosebumps. Well, here we are. This is my daughter-in-law. This is my son. This is my grandson and my granddaughter. So we're here. It brought us together.
My
What's your name?
Margaret Grabowski.
Grabowski, where are you from?
Chicago.
Of course you are. You're Grabowski. I love it.
I think it's wonderful. We needed something like that. You know, and this is fantastic. Everybody's happy. Nobody's, you know, turning over thing or burning cars. This is wonderful. Everybody's for the Cubs. Go Cubs!
Well, I thought I'd never see the Cubs win the pennants and the World Series in my lifetime. Well, when my dad used to take me to the old Wrigley, and back in the olden days when Mr. Wrigley owned the team, it was nice going there. You can be able to park on the street there at that time in the 1950s.
I can't even tell you how many friends I have that have gone to their, you know, parents' graves and, you know, put down a Cubs hat or a Cubs logo or whatever, you know, just because they never got to see this. So many people never got to see this. And, sports in general is something you share with the family. You know, you watch your kids play soccer, you watch your kids play baseball, and then you transfer that over to as a fan for the professional sports team in your market. And, it's something that sports is what you share with the family. And then when you have something like this with the Cubs that, you know, practically owns the city and everybody loves, oh, yeah, family, you share this with your family.
It's amazing, you know, and it's not only just for the people that are living, but all of our grandparents and all our friends and family that aren't here that have been lifelong fans that they're, I know they're watching in heaven, but that's what it's really about. Just we're thankful, and It's a special team, and it's a lot of special memories for a lot of people. Yeah, you know, it's just a great unifier for the city, you know, and all the lifelong fans that have suffered, you know, 108 years, but have been there from thick and thin. So it's a victory lap. It's awesome.
What do you think about this being on Michigan Avenue for a World Series parade?
It's cool. Exciting.
What do you like about this team?
They're just good. The uniforms.
Joy and in disbelief. It's like, pinch me, is this really happening?
It's a fantastic thing for the city of Chicago, for families, for everybody around here. We waited a long time for it to happen, but here it is. We're going to enjoy every moment of it. Take the L. We lived in Evanston, so we take the L from Howard Street L up to Addison, get off of the L, walk over to the ballpark. Never got a ball myself, but we went to tons and tons of games, had those Smoky Links and the Ron Sano's pizza. My father's business partner lived across the street from Ron Sano, and they had the Ron Sano pizzas.
91 years old, and it's wonderful to experience this.
What's your name?
Adele Neems.
And you live in Chicago?
Right, in the Hancock. This is my son. Well, it's just such an amazing, exciting thing for the city, for the Cubs. You know, it's, at a time like this when there's so much division, this kind of unity is reaffirming. We have a democracy. We have wonderful people. And go everything. There are no words to really explain the enormous feelings, the joy that we experience.
Being 91 years old, there's been so much made about people being able to experience this in your lifetime. You get to experience a Cubs World Series in your lifetime.
Right. I don't know that there are any people still alive who could possibly have been here in 1908. They'd have to be 2 years old or 1 year old when they are not, whatever it is. It is really, truthfully, an enormous emotional experience in more ways than none.
Just a dream come true. Been waiting my whole life. I mean, I'm kind of young, so, I mean, a lot of people have been waiting a lot longer, but it's nice to feel, it's a good feeling. It means a lot. Like, my grandpa's a Cubs fan, and he's not here anymore. Like, you know, you think about that sort of stuff, and just brings the family together, celebrate, and awesome. It's goosebumps all the way, and like, it's kind of a surreal feeling. You wake up and you kind of got to pinch yourself because like, it actually happened, and just, I don't know, trying to deal with it at this point. It's awesome.
Baseball's always been a family sport. We play Little League together, and it's a phenomenal sport to share as a family.
Just the experience of going into Wrigley Field, I remember bringing, you know, family and friends from around the country and saying it's like going to Mecca. You walk in there and it's, you know, you smile right away and your heart starts beating and it's just exciting. And this year, obviously, over the top. So here we are, and I don't think a lot of people have really, it's not dawned on us that it actually has happened.
Here come the trolleys.
We've been saying wait till next year my entire life. And now it's next year, and just how this whole series went through, the whole playoff, it was awesome. It's not just about a baseball team, about a baseball game. It's just so much. It's hard to explain. It really, really is. Well, first off, as a child, my parents getting into it and listening and watching on television, but then as a younger adult, 84, watching them blow it, you know, at in San Diego, 2003, 2007, 2008, you know, seeing you're getting so close and then just not getting there, and it was heartbreaking. So, you're like, this last game when they got tied up in the ninth inning, you're like, oh, you're getting ready for the letdown. But it didn't happen. It's just, it's crazy. I'm getting goosebumps just talking about it, man. It's crazy. I have a couple kids, and their whole life I brought them up as Cub fans. And I watched the final game with my son and my wife. My daughter, unfortunately, is in St. Louis, but she's not a St. Louis fan. But it's just so much more than a ball game. And my son was just, we were just overwhelmed with emotion. It was fantastic. I can explain it.
What's it mean to be standing here on Michigan Avenue with your son on his shoulders?
It's fantastic. It's his 13th birthday. We just pulled him out of school. Been a Cubs fan since I was a little kid. I was born on the South Side in Harvey. Grew up here with my grandfather before moving away. I remember listening to the games was always the backdrop of our life in the afternoons before lights. So it's pretty special to be down here all together.
What's it mean to be standing on Michigan Avenue right now?
Well, I'm 47, so I've never seen this before. And, you know, I've been a Cubs fan for a long time. And the last time I cried for a sporting event was in 84 when they were in San Diego. after that, the next time I cried was when I was on Clark Street on Wednesday. And, you know, this means a lot. It means a lot that my kids get to see this, my boys. It means a lot that, you know, my parents, you know, they're immigrants from Bolivia, and they, you know, they got to see this. So there's a lot to this is very meaningful for me.
I never thought I'd ever see this, ever. But here I am, so I'm excited. I'm just happy my grandma's still here. My grandma was a Cubs fan, and I'm a Cubs fan because of it, so she enjoyed it just as much as I did, so it's the best part.
What's it mean to you, man? For family, for generations, it's sort of become the storyline here, the idea that this is not just about winning a World Series, but it's about cherishing and honoring your family.
It is. We got too many long-lost departed family members that should be here.
It brings all the family together, and even my son, one son of the three, is a Sox fan, and even he called to congratulate us, and that was a big thing. So it's thrilling to see little children and big children all over the world. We got congratulations from New York, from California, from a lot of people. It's thrilling. It just is. And I appreciate it. And I appreciate the Cubs. And thank you, WGN.
Thank you.
I love you guys.
The sounds of a Chicago Cubs World Series victory parade along Michigan Avenue today, November 4th, 2016. What a day. We'll have much more tonight as we continue the download here on 720 WGN. Stay with us.
Just singing, go Cubs, go! Go Cubs, go! Hey, Chicago, what do you say? Cubs gonna win today.
That was close. Close to reggae. It's a download here on 720 WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up at 8 o'clock, we'll reload this week's news with Amy Guth and Scott Smith. Also coming up a little bit later in the show, we'll talk with Mark Carmen, of course. Wrap up this year's 2016 Chicago Cubs team. What a week, of course. But we'll talk about the entire season. And he's at the UC right now watching the Bulls take on the Knicks, led by Derrick Rose and Joakim Noah. So lots to do tonight, so we'll get to it in just a moment. Joining me now, Bob Iback. Bob is a former PR director for the Chicago Cubs, 1981 to 1989. He's been a sports writer for a long time for the Washington Post and Baltimore Sun. He is now with Nyco Sports, and he joins me now. Bob, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
Hey, Justin. Appreciate you having me on. What a wonderful memory today. I tell you what, I came here to Chicago in 1981. I had been sports editor in Philadelphia. And before that, as you mentioned, I was with the Washington Post and Baltimore Sun. And I'd never seen Wrigley Field before, and Dallas Green hired me. And all those years we came so close in 84, 89, never thought I would see the whole thing happen. And I could put Chicago Cubs and World Series champions in the same sentence.
That's amazing. Yeah.
It's amazing. And
it really is.
Forever.
It's hard to think. And you're actually, with Nyco Sports, you come up with a way to commemorate this. Talk about what you're giving away.
Yeah, this is really kind of cool. It's a four-ball baseball set made by Rawlings, and it comes with a gorgeous acrylic display case. So each of the four baseballs sits up right inside the case for just $99. And in a second, I'll give out a toll-free number and a website how you can order these. Because we start out with 5,000. They made it very, very limited. 5,000 sets. We're down to less than 900 coming into the show tonight. And what you'll get inside the display case, the four baseballs are very distinctive. The first one in there is a 1907 replica World Series baseball with a logo from that era, all the scores of the games of the Cubs when they won that World Series. Then we have the same thing for the 1908 World Series baseball. Then, of course, everybody wants the one from 2016. And on that, it'll say World Series Champions, the official World Series logo, and all the games against the Indians with the scores will all be there. So you'll be able to remember and look back and remember exactly how each game was played and how it was won. And then the last one is a tribute Wrigley Field baseball, which has some historical facts and a little color photograph on one of the panels. So you get all four of these. It's officially licensed by Major League Baseball. It'll be shipped to you in about 6 weeks. Plenty of time to consider for a Christmas or holiday gift idea. And again, $99 gets you the four balls and the case. So if you'd like to order these, we've got about 900 or less left coming into the night. You can call 1-800-345-2868. That's 1-800-345-2868. 2868, or Justin, you can go right to the website. You can order it there. If you can't get through the phone lines, don't panic. You can see the ball and order it. NikoSports.com, NikoSports.com. And that organization has, gosh, in just the last 4 years, have raised more than $2.2 million for children's charities.
That's great. And, you know, it's interesting, too, because we have on the show, we have Greg Flam. He always talks about we sort of go this segment called the swap meet, and we talk about how to get, you know, what's things are worth. So you got to make sure that you have either a certificate of authenticity or something like that. This has that.
That's right. It has a number certificate of authenticity, and these will appreciate over time. I mean, I used to run the National Sports Collection Convention here in Chicago and Cleveland, some other cities that it rotated around. And the National, I remember going to some of these trade shows and watching the just how memorabilia appreciated. You'll see these baseball sets, I guarantee, in 3 or 4 years on eBay, and they'll probably be worth three times the amount that you spent for them.
All right, the number is 1-800-345-2868, or you can visit the website www.nikosports.com. Bob Iback, former PR director for the Chicago Cubs during the Dallas Green era. So that's our era. That's my era, Bob. I appreciate, appreciate
that
you.
That was a fun time.
Yeah,
it was a great time working for Dallas.
What a tremendous, tremendous day for Chicago Cubs fans, and this is a tremendous way to commemorate it. Bob, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
Okay, Justin, have a wonderful night. Good weekend now.
It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Your Friday night. What a night in Chicago. So let's reload this week's news, which has been dominated heavily by a certain sport and a certain side of town, of course. But this is what we do every Friday. We have on the air. Obviously, the Blackhawks play a lot on Friday nights. So we haven't been on. But we break down the week that was, but not sort of in a way it's just like a round table talking about the stories, but in categories. Winners, the winners and losers, the biggest story, overreported, underreported. What story took you down the rabbit hole, and which story will be remembered in 5 years, 10 years, 50 years, 100, 500 years from now? I have a feeling that one applies tonight. In studio with me, I'm very excited to great radio people as well as friends of mine. Amy Guth, great to see you, Amy. How are you?
Great to see you. Always a pleasure
Amy,
to join you.
Amy, of course, hosts the Business Lunch and the Saturday Night Special, both on Saturdays here on 720 WGN. She also is a filmmaker, and she has the podcast with Rex Hupke, which is going well. So thanks for – what do you call that podcast?
We call it Guth and Hupke on Politics, because everything else we came up with was like an unpublishable pun or something. So we just decided, well, let's just call it exactly what it is. And then the like headline convention we use, it's always the worst – or the worst election ever, the worst debate ever, the worst whatever. It's always the worst something ever.
There you go. Also joining us, Scott Smith. Scott Smith, good to see you, our media contributor here on The Download. And also you can find him at Our Man in Chicago on Twitter, Facebook, Friendster.
Friendster, yeah. You're still trying to keep that going. You're still flogging that, yeah. Still got my top eight.
That's right. All right, so let's get to it. Let's talk about the biggest story of the week. I mean, I don't think that, you know, as we share our stories before, you know, obviously the Chicago Cubs winning the World Series, it's kind of strange to say. When you say it out loud, it's like, yeah, I guess that would be the biggest story of the week.
Yeah, you're sort of walking around in a little bit of a dream state. I think everybody kind of is, right? You know, you're used to seeing the rallies now at this point. We've got the Blackhawks, you know, a lot of people, not as many as you'd like, but a lot of people remember the White Sox in 2005, you know. So a downtown rally in Grand Park is not an unusual sight. And yet seeing the aerial shots with seas of blue, that Cubby blue is something that's in fact unusual, and I think seeing the CTA and the Metro as jammed as it was, I don't remember that happening for any of the Blackhawks rallies. So we definitely had some folks from Schaumburg who hadn't seen the city in a while, so that was nice.
And hadn't got the inside of a train station for a little bit,
too.
I mean, obviously the Cubs be the story, but as we talk about what, I mean, maybe we talk about, you know, the Cubs being the story, but what was the part of this Cubs story that grabbed you guys? What was it this week? What's it, when we talk about sort of the bonus round, what was it, the side stories about the Chicago Cubs that you found interesting?
Well, I loved all of the stories of, you know, oh, you know, so-and-so's grandfather was doing this last time they were in the World Series and a lot of that. And I thought it was very touching and cool how a lot of people were then going to Wrigley after the win to put like a memorial, like as if to let a loved one know, we finally got there. I know you didn't live to see it. You know, I mean, someone
and
I follow.
The whole wall, they put the chalk on,
yeah,
on the wall.
I mean,
that's crazy.
Somebody I'm connected to on social media, you know, lost his mom just in the last couple of years and went and wrote like, Mom, we did it. And, you know, someone else I know, her fiance died. And she was at the Sunday night game and, you know, and like, and it, there was just so much meaning for so many people and it was just so touching. And I thought that was very sweet. I also really loved, I was there, I was about a block north of the field outside when it happened. And it was really exciting energy to see. It was cool to see so many people so excited. And I really loved when it happened, I shot some video and started sprinting north on Clark Street to get out of there. Cause I got my video. I did my quick little bit. I'm out. And I had to be up really early the next morning. So I am like sprinting north on Clark Street towards Montrose and everyone is running. I mean, they moved the police barricade. So like
they're
people are just
at you?
Running at me. I felt like a salmon swimming upstream or something.
Weird.
And I pulled over at one point to get a little more video. And a guy just like, as soon as I hold my phone up, a guy just like hits the back of it and it hits me in the face. So a cop's in front of me. He's like, go shoot your thing. Go, 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 go. So I like shoot this video really quick. And I put it on Instagram. Keep running, keep running. And I finally got to a cab. It was actually very easy to get a cab up there because they were dropping everyone off right there.
Okay.
And I end up going like, just, I was like, get to Western Avenue and just go south, right? Because I, you know, a few miles away. And, but I was like, get as far west as you can. Like, let's, we were going to get stuck otherwise. And all down, up and down Western Avenue, people were like, one guy had a grill. He pulled out into the median, into the turn lane, just to like blow stuff up inside the grill and shoot it off. And somebody
fireworks,
had like,
yeah,
like paint cans, and he took his shirt off and lit it on fire just so it was burning. And it was just, it was funny because it was just this unbridled joy. And then I wake up at like 3:30 in the morning. My neighbor was outside blowing things up in his alley and singing Go Cubs Go. And it was funny. And I know a lot of people were kind of irritated by it, but I thought it was lovely just to see the whole city kind of alight.
A lot of hand high fives with strangers, things.
Absolutely. I know. I think I saw somebody tweet something like, I have high fived exactly 217 strangers in the last
day. It was nice to see like an actual joyful celebration. I think a lot of people were worried like, you know, what happens if the Cubs eventually win the World Series?
Right.
The city is going to blow up and this and that. And it didn't happen.
No.
You know, largely a couple, I think they took down a light pole and were running around with live wires that night. But other than that, you know, it was nice to see. I don't know. I don't necessarily buy the whole idea that the whole city comes together. I mean,
right.
As
there's
much
two,
as
yeah,
this is
teams,
a
right.
Cubs
there's
town,
two teams, yeah.
I don't necessarily think that that necessarily happens. But a thing, an underdog story, a right. story that this has finally happened. You know, I think even White Sox fans are maybe have some measure of relief that, oh, good. Now we can stop talking about the next time they're going to win the World Series.
Yeah.
I think that's
my favorite thing. My favorite thing on Wednesday night, we got done here. You know, we were on for post game. It was so thrilling to be a part of that broadcast and everything here on WGN. And I walked down Hubbard Street. You'd like that, Amy. And walked
past
the
gauntlet there.
Yep, exactly.
Nice.
Walked through, and they had, you know, I get angry because I'd like my celebrations to be on the sidewalk. But for whatever reason, they have to let the streets open on Hubbard because everyone who's in a bar, like who's in Rockets, like, oh, I'm going to go outside. I'm going to walk on the street. But I got to the corner and this guy comes up out of nowhere. I was getting in a cab and he goes, hey, man, we did it. And I put my hand up. I'm kind of dressed up because I was on the air. And he, you know, we high five and he goes, yeah. And he goes, you don't care.
He wanted a hug. He wanted
he
the
wanted
high five
a drunken
and then go
hug.
Into
He's
the
like,
hug.
Why are you not drunk? What is this? So that was my experience. Amy Guth, Scott Smith in studio. We're breaking down the week that was. We'll come back. We'll do winners and losers and overreported and underreported. Maybe get a little bit off this sort of Cubby train for a little bit here on the Download 720. Stay with us. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. All right, we're breaking down the week that was. We're reloading this week's news with Scott Smith and Amy Guth. We all agree, okay? We get it out of the way. We all agree the Cubs are the biggest story of all time. That is done. All right. Good?
Stipulated.
So stipulated.
All right, let's talk about winners and losers. Obviously, you could get very literal with your choice for winners. The Chicago Cubs, right?
Right.
But let's talk about winners. Who do you say in your eyes is a winner?
You know, I would go, if we're going to stick a pin in the Cubs thing, you know, Jason Hayward specifically. I mean, I think like he's largely credited for being the guy in the locker room that turns around the end of that game after the rain delay.
Yeah,
and
right.
Somebody who hasn't necessarily shown all the performance out on the field, but as somebody who, you know, in the movie they eventually make of this, which will, by the way, star Bradley Whitford as Joe Madden, because he's gone gray and has the same black glasses now, by the way.
Right, right.
You know, that will be the climactic moment of that film when Jason Hayward gives the, you know, Friday Night Lights type speech in the locker room and they go out there and they win the game.
There's something extremely, and we've kind of talked about that, the idea that someday, at somewhere, there will be a documentary that will say, you know, here's what was said in the locker room. Here, you know, the 30-year Buddy Ryan kind of moment where they're like talking about the 2016 Cubs and 2036, and they're like, then Hayward said, and then, you know, we find out exactly what he said in there. So it's interesting. I mean, because you think these are grown men, professional athletes, where pump-up motivational speeches don't necessarily do anything, especially when you're talking about guys that have played a full game already.
Right, but I mean, you know, the whole idea of a team dynamic, this is a group that kind of came together in a particular way. They had left a lot of that nonsense of, you know, goats and curses and stuff behind, and there was a very clear sense that, you know, these guys all, you know, had a kind of bond, and to be able to, like, turn to somebody when you're like, oh, God, man, I don't really feel like going out there again, just be like, all right, look, you know, and get that.
Right.
It makes sense. I mean, I think, I don't know that a game like that that is so much about dynamics and is so much about a feeling that you can't have somebody kind of take that moment, a moment when everybody's off the field, you have that moment to kind of talk to each other and say, all right, let's actually do this.
Yeah. Amy, what do you got for winners?
Well, you know, kind of on a similar note, I don't think I had this in my mind for a while, but I didn't really, really realize the powerful optimism of Joe Madden until really this week. And he was talking about, I think after game two or game three, he was really, I was particularly struck by how he is unwilling to throw his guys under the bus. Like, so many coaches are like, well, oh, well, you know, like, we'll just kind of throw their guys under the bus. But he was he has almost this magical optimism and this, like, I believe in my team so much, in a way that I caught myself thinking, you know, to be a player on that team must be, you must feel so incredibly supported.
I mean, there's so many great stories about the Cubs, and one of which that popped out that I've never heard anybody talk about, but they talked about, and this was all surrounding the rain delay speech, that Joe Madden doesn't like meetings.
Right.
That's what this was the article that came out. He doesn't usually call them, so when the players call him, he doesn't get involved in them. And Theo Epstein talked about it too. He's like, well, we have our pre-game strategy meeting where Theo Epstein and Joe Madden and some of the coaches, they sit down about what they're going to try to do in this game. And they were talking about Kyle Hendricks, and there's a lot of hubbub around Joe Madden, you know, making strange choices when it comes to pitching. Mm-hmm. Well, he says, well, we had this plan, and then Joe Madden actually didn't go by the plan. Whatever the plan was, like, Kendricks is going to go for four, then Lester's going to come in at the beginning of the inning. Like, he didn't change. He didn't follow it. And I thought that was interesting. I'm like, oh, that Madden just on his own changed it. And then they said in the same article that Theo Epstein at the end was in, you know, during the rain delay, he was in there strategizing that Jake Arrieta was going to be the pitcher when he came out, and Theo Epstein changed it, or Joe Madden changed it. So I think it's interesting, the dynamic between a coach and a general manager when you're doing strategy sessions, and the coach is like, nah. You know what? It's my game. I'll do my thing. I just think that I didn't know that that's how it played out, that a general manager even was in the room going, let's do this in the second inning.
Right.
I just thought, I've never heard that before. So it was interesting to hear that. Also that Joe Madden just kind of brushed the kid to the side, and Theo Epstein.
That kind of makes sense, though, don't you think? I mean, you're just like, okay. Yeah. Like, that was my Joe Madden impression.
Go back to your office. Yeah. Like, oh, yeah. I got this.
Thanks, Wonder Kid.
Yeah. I mean, he's almost got this, he feels like this almost sixth sense of, like, just everybody just let me.
Everybody chill.
I've already envisioned this, please.
He's so relaxed. You just probably be like, hey, man, remember we said we were going to do that thing? Oh, that's right. You know, like, you just feel like he's just so in the moment, so kind of present with what's happening.
Yeah. I also thought today that his speech at the actual rally, he said, don't believe what you read or what you see on TV. This is a game about players. The moves that managers make and general managers, we don't.
Yeah.
This is about players. And I think he was referring to all of the cottage industry that is, you know, Monday morning quarterbacking when it comes to baseball, pitching moves and this, that, and the other. It's like, I mean, you just, the day after game six of the World Series, the amount of hot air that was used on pitching choices and things of that nature. And I think that was Joe Maddon's way of saying, you know what, people are making, you know, money off of, and the whole world, the sports media world, all that's bogus. All it comes down to is the players playing
the game. At the end of the day, here's somebody standing on a pitching mound throwing a ball and hitting
and
a ball.
They're the ones that make or break the game.
And they're the ones who have to have, like, nerves of steel tell themselves, like, hey, this is the same thing you've been doing since you were a kid. Throw the ball, hit the ball, and run like hell.
And it is, one of the greatest in history. The greatest scenes will be Chris Bryant smiling as he goes to grab it. And it reminds you that it is a game. Yeah. It is a game, and this kid, and they're all kids. These are all under 27 years old. I mean, it's pretty crazy.
You see him hugging and in the dugout. You know, I mean, there's like this familial thing that's there. And
all right, let's come back and do losers because we're out of time. We want to get to the news on time tonight with Rob. So let's come back. We'll do losers because I want to get past baseball. I said that at the beginning of this segment. We just got right back into baseball. But we got past it.
My bad.
I want to talk about some other stories this week, one of which is about the newspaper in this building and an offer that came off the table from Gannett. There's been a lot of dancing around whether or not the Chicago Tribune was going to be purchased or Trunk was going to be purchased. We'll talk about that coming up here. A reload, the week that was. Amy Goose, Scott Smith in studio. Stay with us. Hey, Rob, it's Download here, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio with me, Scott Smith. You can catch him at Our Man in Chicago on Twitter. Also, our media contributor here at The Download. Amy Guth, a host here at 720 WGN, does Saturday Night Special as well as the Business Lunch on Saturdays. And she's also a filmmaker in town. Does a podcast as well with Rex Hupke.
Yeah, leading up to the election. And then I think we're going to stretch it out and keep going until at least the inauguration. There's so much to talk about. There's really...
The Water Reclamation District needs to get its due.
Yeah, we got things to discuss. Yeah. So,
well, why don't we start there? You know what I would like to throw out for... We did winners, but I think for losers is anyone who watches TV right now.
Yeah.
The political commercials, the advertising that decided to go local, not even the Trump and Clinton, because we don't really get that here because Illinois is a blue state, so they're not even fighting that. It is a million-dollar campaign on both sides to essentially demonize Mike Madigan and demonize Donald Trump and anyone who's around either one of those guys, and it is painful. I mean, more than ever, it is painful. And it's because, I mean, I kind of made a joke at the top of the show that I have to turn off primetime TV for my kid. Mm-hmm. The topics that they choose to rail on either candidate are everything from rape to, you know, they're throwing the word incest around. There's sexual assault. There's late-term abortion. I mean, they have really gone after the hot-button items. What do you guys think of that? I mean, do you think this is more than it has been in the past?
Well, I think it's interesting because it's raised a lot of, at least parents I know, I don't have children myself, but a lot of parents that I know have been struggling with that of like, well, my kid has heard this. I have to, it's not on my schedule now. I have to have a conversation that I don't know that I'm ready to have, or I don't know that a 3.5-year-old is ready to have a conversation about what that means. And there like a lot of concern around how to talk to kids about these big things and also how to talk to them in a climate that we're in right now where such extreme behavior is quite normative and where we're, you know, it seems like quite permissive of such extreme and abusive behavior as just kind of the daily thing. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of parents I know are really struggling with that.
Yeah, I was the parent reader at my daughter's school for, she's a kindergartner. And at the end, we read some books, and then there was a point where the kids all got up and told jokes. And it was sort of like pretty much what you'd expect. There were a lot of variations on chickens crossing roads and that the banana orange knock-knock joke, that sort of thing. And at one point, some kid told a joke, and it was like, why did Donald Trump cross to the other side of the road? And it was like, because he was going to jail. Like, I was real nervous, though, before the punchline happened. Because I was like, I don't know.
Hillary Clinton joke too,
yeah,
right?
So I was like, and he's like, oh, I was like, okay, cool. And that ended well.
Wow.
But so like they have this, you know, idea of this person and there's what he represents and it's bullying and things like that. And it is, I had that kind of conversation with my daughter. Like, do you know who Donald Trump is? And she's like, no. I was like, okay, cool. All right, so what are we grateful for today?
Right.
Like, you know, it's like I was able to kind of move on from that.
But I, you know, the commercials are done in such a way, and I mean, they're playing everywhere from cable TV to primetime.
It's coming into the comptroller's race.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean,
yeah, it's
Munger
absolutely.
Is getting hit because she hasn't said she's not voting for Trump. She hasn't said who she's
and
voting
for. And I just, I don't know what it is, and there's something about it, and I feel it's disingenuous or somewhat inauthentic. And plays to the lowest common denominator to say, especially about Bruce Rauner, that Bruce Rauner is connected to Donald Trump. When we educated readers and people who've watched the news know that Bruce Rauner has gone out of his way to separate himself from Donald Trump. He's not. I mean, the Republican Party, what they've sort of done to try and tie that together, I feel plays. And it's same on the other side. But Mike Madigan, he wants to raise your taxes. He once voted for 33. Yeah, we know. And then you rolled that tax back, and that's where we're at.
Well, there's plenty of reasons to dislike. Yeah. You know, there's plenty of things to talk about, and it's not even so much always like I wish we'd talk about the issues, but there's so many things that you could discuss about Bruce Rauner and this sort of proxy fight he's having with Madigan that are, you know, he's pouring money into all these races, and the amount of money they're pouring into these races and what that money could go for instead, like things like that. And yeah, it all gets sort of wrapped up. There's no respite from.
What do you
Trump.
Think about the idea that both sides have decided that there is one character they're going to demonize? So the Republicans have gone after Mike Madigan. It doesn't matter who the candidate is. I kind of joked at the top. I don't know who's running for what.
Yeah.
I just know, you know, it's just like they're just connecting their name to Mike Madigan.
Yeah, you just know the through lines of this person
right.
is connected to this person.
And
therefore,
it's Trump
it's
versus Madigan.
Yeah,
and
it is.
I mean, how do you think, as we think about the political process and how we kind of work that out, that just seems to me like a strategy that to me is not working.
Well, if I'm going to put on my marketing hat for a second, you know, Mike Madigan has plenty of built-in brand awareness. You know, I mean, like, that's what they're looking for. They're looking to sort of have a very simple message that they can sell, and it saves you from having to explain things like, well, here's what a TIF district is and all those kinds of things. So you really just, if you're going to throw that kind of money at it, you throw it a message that you know works. And, hey, I was sitting next to a guy in a bar. It was downtown. It's a trader bar. It's, you know, and the guy was saying things that was just
right out of the commercial.
Right out of the commercial. You know, you're sort of garden variety rubber stamp, like, well, you know, politics and the government is all. And it was on, it was like he had it about Obama. He had it about Democrats. And then he had it about, you know, he was upset, I think, about something that Donald Trump did. I think more of a tactical issue. But, you know, it was just. This was the guy who was had like sick and fed up.
Well, this is this election in particular, and this is a topic that keeps me up at night anyway. But this particular election has really driven that point home to me is about media literacy. I mean, we're talking about an election that is going to be largely decided on email forwards and sound bites. And here we are at a time when we have greater access to information than any other time ever in the history of ever. And yet we are, you know. An email that is written in Comic Sans in four different letters is like, well, it says this right here. Like, but like it doesn't, you know, I mean, I've received some from relatives and had been like, okay, anytime you receive an email forward, I need you to take that quote and Google it. Just pick a topic, like pick a piece of it and Google it and just do a little fact checking for yourself because most of them are complete pieces of crud.
I thought the same thing, and we'll talk about, you know, some of the stories about the rabbit hole and about Facebook news. I mean, obviously you go on Facebook and you can prove any point you ever want with a article from a biased source.
Certainly.
I feel like there are friends of mine that I'm like, huh, like right off the way, I just look right at the URL.
Right.
And you're like, okay, that's not something that I know. When anything I see with a, you know, you just at a certain point, you go, okay, that's biased at its beginnings, you know. And I wonder, and it's kind of interesting to me because there are some credible sources this election season that have swayed closer to that the pendulum is swung. Like I think of the Washington Post, unbelievable place, done so much for journalism in this country. But Washington Post and that URL is starting to get to me going, well, they obviously don't like Trump.
Well, and I think the other thing is that so much of what's happened in this election cycle, there things like Twitter and social media have been weaponized in a way that they weren't before.
Truly.
And so the volume of a fake news story, when I was doing the news, there was Fox apologizing for talking about Hillary Clinton getting indicted, and they had reported that as an actual news story. Well, that was on a fake news site, and it had gotten so loud in social media that it started to get picked up by other news sites are like, well, is this real or not? And even some that are reputable feel like they have to jump into that fray and say, we're going to talk about why this isn't true. But even doing that, gives it some kind of legitimacy. And the idea that mainstream media or just media sites in general have been so demonized that it's like, well, of course that's what they'd say. They'd yeah. say that is a fake news site because they're trying to hide the real
truth. I want to talk about Tronc at some point, and we will tonight, but I did think it interesting this week that the Chicago Tribune kind of had a media literacy issue with John Cass's column mm-hmm. where he had called for Hillary Clinton to resign.
Right.
And then Breitbart and other right-wing sources of news said the Chicago Tribune is calling for Hillary Clinton to resign. Yeah. And there was even infight between columnists who are like, that's editorial. That's not how they believe. Mm-hmm. I mean, there really is, like you said, it almost becomes weaponized.
A similar thing happened when they endorsed Gary Johnson. You know,
yeah,
it was
exactly
the newsroom, the editorial side felt like they were having to carry the weight for what was happening, you know, in the op-ed pages. So it's a
lack of understanding about a lot of levels of newsroom, and it's our own fault in this industry for not being a little more transparent about how newsrooms work. Editorial boards are physically and emotionally and intellectually separate from the newsroom of the people doing the reporting. Within a newsroom, there are people doing the reporting, and that is, here are facts, I will convey them to you. Fact, gather, convey facts. Then there are columnists who are not only entitled to an opinion, but required to have a take on something. That is why they are writing a column. They're not
Absolutely
there to
right.
just report right. facts. And I think there's a lot of confusion about, you know, like lots of people at the Tribune, like regularly you see them on social media being like, oh, you're not unbiased at all. Well, that person's not supposed to be. That person is a columnist. They're supposed to have a take.
That's right. They get paid for is have a take.
Right. And I think it's our own fault. I mean, it's easy to just say, oh, God, people are dumb. That's not it. It's our own fault for not being
I wonder
more
if social media
our,
plays a role well, in that because
absolutely.
It used to be page three, you knew where the column was.
Exactly.
Now you don't know.
Exactly.
Right. Now you don't know.
From a stylistic perspective, if you saw the person's name in large letters, you saw their picture in yeah. there. You had a very clear sense that this is a column, this yeah. is attributed
right.
to this person,
right.
and I know the framing of it. But now a column looks like an article,
right.
looks like an
and
op-ed.
And I wonder if that has something to do with my Washington Post or New York Times, right. because what's being right. attached is not necessarily their news report, their right. objective in their news reporting, but their columnists are taking a take.
Right, and you have these not reputable sites that are going to be very biased. They don't even have a byline on it. It'll just say like, you know, sometimes there's a couple of them that I've seen that have like a username. It'll be like Skaterboy123. Like, really, that guy's a credible journalist. Aces, guys, real good.
Skaterboy's got a good take.
I love that guy.
But when it sits in the feed, when people don't necessarily click through from Facebook,
right.
every story looks like everything else.
Everything
it's got a
looks
photo,
legitimate.
It's got a headline.
Right.
right.
Exactly.
I wonder if we're going to see a world in which that gets adjusted.
It's
I think
have
we
to.
Do. Yeah,
yeah.
I
it
think
already
we
has,
will.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think a few things are going to happen. One thing I think is kind of further out on the horizon, but that's particularly interesting when we think about it in terms of media literacy, is I think more and more it's going to be less about the publication a journalist is attached to, and it's going to be that individual journalist's reputation and that like you're going to follow the journalist and their work more than you're going to follow. I read this local paper, and we're already seeing that with people in that you hear about something happening, you hear water cooler talk, you go Google it, and the first, you know, right there in Google News, you're going to click on what's first or what's biggest
right.
or the thing you recognize. And it's not about like hometown brand loyalty. It's about the thing I'm going to click on right there.
And those weird news sites are now starting to pop up in Google results a lot more
right.
than they ever used to.
Which is concerning. And I do think there are plenty of credible and trained journalists who have gone independent and maintain their own sites and do fine work. And I do think it's a conversation we had early in the blogging world or in the blogging timeline. Like everyone was like, well, how will you know what the difference is? There are journalists who blog. There's also a lot of not journalists who blog. And it's really important that we have a way to differentiate that because start with if it ends with .blogspot, it may not be, but it might be. That's the thing, right? It might be a journalist.
We saw Facebook prioritize people's photos, people's status
yeah.
updates a lot more than brands and publishers. They just changed
right.
the algorithm
yeah, we'll
to,
see if
to
that
do that.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really interesting. The timing of it started when things had gotten to a real fever pitch in the political season.
Yes.
And it seems like if people are turned off, like you're saying you're tired
yeah.
of ads,
turn it. Yeah.
people are going to get to a point again where they're like, I can't go through another season like 2016.
Yeah. Tired of Facebook.
I'm going to stop using
yeah.
Facebook.
They'll learn.
And that is going to turn people off enough where they're going to start to see a flattening out of those kinds of stories.
Scott
again.
Smith, Amy Guth, we're doing The Week That Was. We're breaking down the news. We'll come back. We'll do some overreported and underreported here on The Download. Stay with us.
Mm-hmm.
rocking, getting the jams going. Pete Zimmerman, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. It's a download. We're reloading this week's news with Scott Smith and Amy Guth in studio. All right, so overreported. You want to start there? You want to start, Scott? What do you got for overreported story of the week?
I mean, the Cubs. Can I say that? Can it still be the biggest standout? I mean, we won't go on. I mean, there was a story about Theo's twin brother, I think, at one point. I felt like that was probably, I think the number of people, supposedly 3 million to 5 million
this
people
is,
being
I think
downtown,
this is really
overreported
I think
and
it,
underreported
I think
at the same time.
It may be wrong.
Yeah.
In the sense that, you know, it's more people have reached out, you know, even tonight, even on, as I said at the beginning of the show, I'm like 5 million people, seventh biggest. You're like, to have 5 million people in one area, this is, you know, people are showing, it's even on Twitter. Like,
even if it's there's 2.7 million people in the city of Chicago. Like, that's, you know, understanding that a lot of people came in from the suburbs.
Still,
how are you going to have that many people in the down, and I'm in the full downtown area?
I have a feeling that they'll put out the official and they're like, it's great, guys, 275,000.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Fox 32 had a headline that said, Cubs World Series celebration ranks as seventh largest gathering in human history.
I know. Justin, you were talking about we apparently beat a Rod Stewart show?
A Rod Stewart show in Brazil.
What period, though?
This would have been a 90s show.
Okay.
He was like in the romance era. Downtown Train
right.
and all those.
Yeah. He was singing with the Isley brother. This old heart of mine been broke a thousand.
That was like,
you can get it. You can see it. It's a soccer stadium, you know. He's sitting there, you know.
It was after spandex. He had the suits, really big hair.
Right. Yeah. But you can say, and I also think that overreported, and it's been going on not just this week, has been the relationship between the Cubs and the White Sox in terms of, the bar that always puts up the things that are you know, nasty about the Cubs.
Right.
And then there's just this jump to the idea that every Sox fan feels that way. I mean, I think Sox fans have been extremely respectful for the nonstop sort of Cubs flow of media for the last three months at this point.
I only know one Sox fan who was like, okay, I'm over this. I don't want to see this. And it came from, hey, it wasn't, by the way, it wasn't the only victory the city's seen, 2005. Yeah. What's up?
Sox fans got upset when that erasure was happening. You know, when ESPN
I did not like that one bit.
Different TV stations were, you know, national TV
we're
networks.
Forgetting that the White
Sox. Chicago, finally. We're like, well, no, wait, hang on.
Because Sox fans are used to being forgotten about, right, in the city, right? Like, we're used to the Cubs being the big story. And so we're just like, okay, that's fine. But then when you're like, you're going to take away our World Series, we're going to get a little upset with you.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
Hold on.
What do you got for overreported, Amy?
Well, I think the Alderman Cubs tickets thing.
You're right.
I was really over that.
That was terrible. That was just so.
Yeah.
Ugh. Like, we don't really. I mean, that's almost the perfect overreported story because you're like, you know what? You guys, what do you even. At a certain point, I think they kept talking so much that they were like, I don't know why
I'm
talking
anymore.
You
don't even know what you're saying
anymore. I feel like an idiot.
Tickets are things. People buy them and go to things. Like, you don't even know what you're saying. You're just saying the things.
There's a point where I think all of them are like, just
stop talking. I'm not going to say this was overreported because it is, in fact, newsworthy. I think the I don't even know how to say this without saying, like, the biggest jerk in the world. Okay, so the Taco Bell post, right? Mm-hmm. The Taco Bell at Clark and Addison was that Taco Bell sign got taken away at one point during the excitement. And I don't think it was overreported because certainly you need to report that because there was, you know, dangerous. But nonetheless, it was like it was said by more than one outlet in a way that you would say, and Lake Michigan is forever empty.
Right.
Like people said it like
this you need to know this.
It was like, and the Taco Bell sign has been moved. Like, it's a Taco Bell, you guys.
Yeah,
like,
it's not a landmark.
I feel bad for the manager who has to do it. Right. It's not a landmark. Right. The Alamo has not been burned to the ground.
But there was a lot of reporting around that Taco Bell because there was a story about how the kind of prep work that was going into the Taco Bell preparing for the World Series.
There was so much about the Taco Bell. And it was the same way that you would be like,
we're getting up early and we're chopping food. It's like, you don't say.
The same way that you would say, like, lots of mint was prepared for the right. Kentucky Derby, or lots of Chicago dogs were prepared by this just, iconic hot dog place.
Do you think it's possible that they're surrogates because there's been so much change in Wrigleyville in 6 months? So, I mean, the McDonald's is gone. All the places are gone.
They're like,
so
they're
like Taco Bell just takes on all of the history of Wrigleyville.
There was a story that came out. Again, there were a lot of food-related stories in this World Series about how there were people who were trying to entertain business clients and using, you know, Cubs game as a peg. And with all the changes that they're making, there aren't enough fine dining restaurants in the Wrigleyville area. Yeah. And I was like, y'all are building a hotel there. Put some of that stuff in
there.
They're
going to. They will.
Like, that's where that
we're
stuff
seeing
goes.
We're seeing an interesting time in Wrigleyville, which I will say is my overreported story. Wrigleyville.
Yeah.
Like, that's it.
Yeah.
Right. I don't want to hear about Wrigleyville
so
for at least until April.
Right.
Yeah. Right? We're done with Wrigleyville. Amy Guth, Scott Smith in studio. We'll come back. We'll do some underreported stories and also get to what story sucked you down the rabbit hole this week. It's the week that was here in the download. Stay with us.
Outstanding.
Pete Zimmerman's on fire. He's all jacked up from the parade today.
I'm feeling this, man.
He's good. He's got a little Rod Stewart for us. It's Download 720 WGN. We're breaking down the week that was, reloading the week with Amy Guth and Scott Smith. All right, so we've done a lot of categories. Let's keep up. Let's do underreported stories. Amy, what was your underreported story of the week?
You know, I feel like it's hard to say what was underreported because there's just so much overblown. It's like hard to even think about. The one I hope we talk about a little more is a fairly new story, and that is about Kane delivering the speech in Spanish. I think that is really interesting. That's history making. That's not something a candidate has done before.
It's not just one line.
No, he did it, and he did it confidently. It wasn't like awkward white guy Spanish. Like, he like clearly has a confident command of the language. And you know, I thought it was funny to hear Trump being called a clown in Spanish.
I also say that there's another story that I read as well about the Latino vote in Florida being astronomically for Hillary Clinton, something like 90%.
Right.
A strange number that a lot of pundits are saying could actually be a nationwide number, that they're only polling that in Florida. It could be everywhere, that Donald Trump has done so much to alienate the Latino vote, and it's going to play a role in this election.
And I think this points at something larger, right? We talk about, like, the woman vote, the Latino vote, the black vote. Like, that's not a thing. That's really, you cannot categorize an entire group of people around one belief system. You just can't do that. And so there are nuances to any group, and there are subgroups of every group, and you just can't.
Right.
And I think that's really problematic to talk when we talk about, like, a Latino vote or a black vote. That's just not, that's not a one united thing.
It's a category for polls.
It's a category for polls, and that's it. But I think it becomes part of the narrative where we think about a peoplehood all believing and thinking the same things.
Right.
And I think in that way it's very problematic that it continues to be language attached to a poll.
Welcome to Chicago. That's how they've been doing it since Royko's boss, right?
Just about
voting blocks and ethnicities. What do you got for underreported story, Scott Smith?
So I think it's sort of a combination of underreported and poorly reported, which was this birth control for men. Story.
Oh, that is so interesting.
So there was a study. It was done back in 2011. This was not a recent thing. And the sort of too long didn't read version of the story was that men were experiencing side effects from taking birth control. And so they stopped taking it because men are wusses and can't handle the same side effects that women handle when they are taking birth control. But BuzzFeed dug into it, and they found that 75% of the men in the study actually said that they were okay continuing to take the birth control despite some of the side effects, which were pretty significant. Injection site pain, inability to return to full fertility after taking the drugs, depression, irregular heartbeat, things that were, and about 60% of the people involved in the study had some of those side effects and were pretty significant over and above the kinds of side effects you take when you know women take
birth
control.
But they were willing to move forward.
But they were willing to move forward for it, but the scientists felt like the study and the drug was unsafe, and it was introducing side effects that were unintended and over and above what they should have had. And so the scientists were actually the ones that discontinued the study.
So this is really a media narrative where the narrative is guys can't handle it as opposed to the facts of the story.
Right. It is a couple of narratives. I think there's a media narrative that of like, because the headline you saw on a lot of sites, it was splashy, was like male birth control creates create side effects that women have been dealing with all along without
right.
complaint.
Right.
And that was kind of that. But then there's a subbeat of that, and that is a lot of women I know and a lot of women I follow on social media were sharing that story with very much an eye roll, very much a like, you know what? Welcome to being a woman. That's a thing that happened. Like, I think women were pushing it even further and dismissing the crap out of that story, because it was just like, I heard so many women going like, I can't even go here. I can't even right. think of this. And then it introduced a second piece of women really talking about what that meant for a man to be on birth control. It's like, at the end of the day, if your birth control fails, like, it ain't on you as much as it's on right. me. I'm going to suffer a bigger consequence
and
than that.
There were women I knew who were like saying, you know, so if a guy told you he was taking that kind of birth control,
right.
would you believe him? I mean, there were so many.
So it really got into
things.
The other.
It really
yeah.
did. It really opened a lot of conversation. I know women in committed relationships that said that have complete trust of their partner, but even and they were like, I don't know that I would want to entrust that to him.
You know what I was bummed out about that, and I'm not blaming or saying, I'm going to say this, the dismissal of, yes, we know all about those side effects. Those yeah. happened to us. It was the problem with this being underreported is that we didn't get to have a conversation about like,
yeah.
why is it okay for us to have all these side effects associated with women taking birth control? Mm-hmm. Why are we not talking about the 10% of women who experience depression when they're
right.
on certain kinds of birth control? And it's very significant. And you don't necessarily realize that it's because of the type of birth control you're taking that this is happening. And so there were all these different things we could have talked about around some of the side effects that happen around birth mm-hmm. control that because it was like, because the narrative was, oh, well, yes, welcome to the club. This is
yeah.
what happens. It shouldn't be that's just what happens. We should be having a bigger conversation about that and the responsibility
yeah.
of men and women to preventing unwanted, you know, pregnancy. And that was a conversation that we totally lost because of the way that this story was reported.
Agreed. And I think that we also made that conversation unbelievably insulated within male groups and female groups.
Mm-hmm.
I don't
right.
I saw very few men and women having that conversation. So mm-hmm. I saw a lot of people speaking on behalf of a partner and saying like, I wouldn't or I would I you know and trying even trying to be have some degree of empathy for a partner, but at the end of the day, I did not see men invited into conversations where women were
right.
dismissing and saying, "Oh well, welcome to it." Nor did I see men saying, I don't think I realized it. I don't think I knew those side effects. I feel badly now that
yeah.
my female partner has been on the pill for all these years. So, you know, I saw those conversations happening, but I did not see them
yeah.
happening.
And
in
it's
a
so
co-ed
interesting
way.
Because the eye roll really comes from the way that that story kind of the mm-hmm. headline
yeah.
and the reporting
right.
of it,
right?
I mean, that's where I think that there is some validity in the eye roll based on the idea that the headline was men can't handle
right.
it.
Yeah.
Right. Right. Scott Smith, Amy Guth in studio with me right now. We're reloading this week's news, 312-981-7200. All right, so we'll take a break. We'll come back and let's talk rabbit holes. Sound good? Sound good? I did not think I read it this way, but the Amy is from Dallas. She's like, "Why put down Dallas?"
Fort Worth.
I don't
seem like you were mocking.
No, the stars. Yeah. They're I don't like the stars. I have nothing against Dallas.
I like how this suddenly became us workshopping your live reads. Like that's what we do.
Scott Smith, Amy Guth in studio. We're breaking down the week that was. All right, so for this category, it's the rabbit hole. Which story really took you down the rabbit hole? What story were you like, oh, I'll check this out on social media? And then you're like, I didn't know that. And you start bouncing from another one and finding your way and essentially being a scholar on the subject.
Yeah.
We'll start with you, Scott. What do you got for a rabbit hole story?
The 17-year-olds out of Macedonia who have apparently found a nice little market for themselves in plagiarizing and creating fake news stories about Trump. And there have been multiple
wow.
stories of this kind of nature where people have realized that politics is a field you can mine in social media for clicks and then for some, you know, cheap advertising dollars off of that. There was a story even last week that was talking all about Facebook has now turned its trending news box over to an algorithm. And so there's all kinds of fake news
mm-hmm.
coming in through there. We were talking about this a little bit in a previous segment.
I hate that. Yeah.
Even the New York Times did a story about Outbrain and Taboola, which are these boxes you see on the bottom of news stories like from the web and other stories you might enjoy. And publishers do that because every time somebody clicks on that, they get a little bit of revenue. And there's a lot of, you know, fake-ish kind of stuff, either from the photos that are, you know, everybody's seen. They're like, you'll never believe what this child star looks like now. And
right,
it's like,
right.
No, I know that. That's the kid from Stranger Things or whatever, you know. And so there's all this, like, fake news garbage, and I get thrown down the rabbit hole with that because you just start to, you know, peel back the layers and realize, right. And it's apparently 17-year-olds in Macedonia, and they've said they tried doing Bernie Sanders-related content. It didn't pay as well. And they realize, they realize that the spigot is about to be turned off because the election's about to happen, and they're specifically targeting U.S. users because they're worth more, and they realize they're going to start doing sports now.
Right.
Because that's apparently where the money is.
And you know what? It's so true.
Yeah.
They throw up a story about Jay Cutler, and I'm going to be clicking through being like, Jay does what? Smoke a Jay? And I'll be like, oh, this is fake. All right, Amy, what do you got for rabbit hole?
Well, so this is a complicated rabbit hole because it was exactly the path of where you start and then where you land. And suddenly you're like, why am I on Wikipedia for jelly beans? Oh, right. I was looking up this one guy. Or, you know, like the weirdest thing will happen, right? But it started with, I saw a story about a new study done linking daylight savings and depression about how each twice a year there'll be an uptick
this week
because like regularity of sleep and circadian rhythms are very linked to depression. And, you know, this is a city with a long, tough winter. And I think a lot of us struggle through it. Like by February, like it's rough, right? It's hard to be cheery. And then those first sunny days, everybody's very cheery. So that's where I started with it. And I then kind of got into this whole, a lot of stories about how the election is putting people in a certain mindset where, like, we're all really keyed up and we're all really just like, just get it over with already, right? Like, emotions are so high around this election that it was about that led to one offshoot of the rabbit hole about like journalists and this particular election reflecting on past elections of like, yeah, by Halloween we were tired, but it was still fun. This year I might need therapy when it's done, like, or an armed guard, or, that kind of feel, which then led to retailers reporting they believe that their sales are lower because no one wants to make a decision leading up to the election. Particularly of interest was the jeweler, Jared. They were saying no one's buying engagement rings right now because, and when like informally polling customers, they were like, I don't want to make a major life decision until I know what's happening.
Yeah, so like election fatigue in a way.
It's election
like affecting
fatigue
everywhere. Yeah, because Susie was on road talking about the same thing that like the markets are in a hiatus.
Weird,
they're not going to do anything.
Yeah.
And it's not, and that's not good. There's no fluctuation right now until they know exactly what's going to happen.
I think the FBI coming out on last Friday and, you know, having this sort of like vague thing, you know, that was like the ultimate. We literally don't know what's going to happen next. And even when it does, we don't even know what to do with that information.
Yeah.
So it's, you have this sort of Damocles thing happening,
but it's
so empty. I felt that all week. There was this weird like thing of, I'm not sure what is going to happen here. And I think that's, you know, combine that with the Cubs, and it was like, everything is off. The Cubs are winning a World Series. This weird thing is happening.
The Cubs helped in that regard because we didn't have to think about it. Because the one thing that I always think about and I say, why did I even think about that, is none of this is going to stop.
Far too much money
has been made off of clicks on social media and the election that whoever wins on Tuesday is going to have the same amount of media scrutiny, the same amount of foot in mouth, the same amount of FBI chasing, the same amount of political rivals trying to one up. It's not going to stop, and it's going to
absolutely.
When you think about the year from now, that automatically makes me not want to buy it. Any jewelry from Jared.
Right. Well, and I think it's interesting that we have kind of have this mental block, like there's a cliff we're all going to fall off. Like after November, you know, after the election day, it's like going to be beyond that is here there be dragons. Like there's just nothing after that, right?
Yeah,
but
right.
In fact, it's not going. There's not going to be this sudden certainty. One piece of the puzzle will be revealed.
There never has been, right?
Right. But there's never like a really solidly... There's not going to be any like solid resolution. There will be to that particular race, but like the things that this election has unearthed, they're not going to go away.
You still have to remember that guy you stopped working with two jobs ago is like a super Bernie bro. You know, you have to like just live with that. And
the question I have is, do I have to go through Facebook and follow back like after it's over and be like, okay, now I'm going to follow the people that I unfollowed for election time.
Well, I think that'll be interesting. Like, I know a lot of families that are people that are saying, like, I had to mute all my family members. Mm-hmm. It's too much. I love them and I don't want to kill them right now. So it'll be interesting. I think families need to heal a little bit.
Yeah. Right.
And I think
Thanksgiving's coming up, so I'm sure everything will be fine.
Oh, it's going to be the worst Thanksgiving. Yeah. It's going to be the weirdest Thanksgiving in the world. We need to hug it out.
All right. Yeah. My rabbit hole, which is one that is I'm offering this rabbit hole up to amateur investigative reporters. This is one I have not had the time to do. But when there was all this brouhaha over the honorary street sign for Donald Trump right over by the Trump Tower here in Streeterville, aldermen kind of said, we're taking this sign away. There also was a story that Rahm Emanuel was not going to give back the donation that Donald Trump gave him for his 2011 mayoral candidates or race for mayor, which begs the question, why is Donald Trump giving money to Rahm Emanuel? Seems like a very strange bedfellows when you think about the idea of where Donald Trump is now and what he represents and what he's running on, what platform. Why in God's green earth would he give money to someone who was in Hillary Clinton's campaign, who has been Hillary Clinton's partner essentially for years? So you look at that, you say, okay, well, that's interesting, right? I guess he's a businessman. And the DNA info story about the honorary street sign, they talked to former alderman, 42nd Ward alderman, Burt Nateras. And Burt Nateras, a long time, he's been retired for a while, but he was the alderman here for the honorary street sign. He said, his quote, which is, I had to read back because I'm like, what? He said, Donald Trump was, he used to not be like this. That was his first thing. He was not, when we knew him back in 2011 or 2010, he was not like this.
Fact check false.
Right, exactly. But then he goes on to say, he was such a nice man when I went to Mar-a-Lago for a reception with him. And I'm like, why is a 42nd Ward alderman going to a Florida golf course to hang out with Donald Trump, the same Donald Trump who's building this building along the river, who has a huge name? There was this big, remember this story about the Trump sign that he put on, and that wasn't part of the deal, but then the aldermen were like, hands are tied, nothing we can do. Nothing. Yeah. I mean, it's his building. There's something in there where there's a lot of money that has changed
hands.
Justin,
are you saying people with access to power and money just hang out with each other?
All I am
or
saying,
might abuse that
All
power?
I am saying is Come that on. I'm Someone not sure what the relationship between Donald Trump and the Chicago political machine is. I mean, now you see him sort of bad-mouthing in debates. I think there's a story in there about what their relationship has been in the past. Mm-hmm. I want to see some more transparency about what came about and what was. There's a great story Lee Bay tells. I'll let him tell it at some point about Mayor Daley and Donald Trump. But there's something about the alderman, Donald Trump, Rahm Emanuel, that just doesn't add up, and I'd like to know more. So for amateur investigative reporters, I give you that lead.
Great.
Yeah, Amy Goose, Scott Smith in studio. Let's take a quick break. We'll get the news. If you guys can stick around, we'll do one more segment about what story we're going to remember 50, 100, 500 years. That's not the Cubs. Gotcha. Welcome back to 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. We're breaking down the week that was here on the Download with Scott Smith, Amy Goose.
It's like a Download after dark.
Yeah, that's right. After 9:30, we slow it down.
Yeah. Some good jams on this show.
It gets real Jefferson Airplane up in here. That's all Pete. All right, so let's talk about our last category tonight. This is the category of what story will be remembered in 50, 100, 500 years from now. This is a category that really makes people think. When my panelists come on, they're like, what am I going to say? What's really going to remember? What are we going to remember, recall from this week? This week is kind of a no-brainer.
Yeah, it was kind of a gimme, right?
Right.
I mean, I would like this to be 50 years from now. This is the year that Chicago shed its, you know, second city status. The lovable losers thing was largely a myth, particularly in the last 20 years, because the city has embraced the Cubs so much. And it would be nice for us to think about how it is okay. We can have nice things. You know, we don't have to. A friend of mine was posting on Facebook. He's like, you know, can we talk about how even when Chicago wins, we got to talk about how we lost? Like you were saying, you know, all the talk about Aroldis Chapman and what it, you know, and Madden's pitching efforts and, or, you know, his choices and stuff. The idea that, you know, we don't actually have to have a government that has corruption in it. We don't have to have neighborhoods that are bad in order for us to have ones that are good. We can have a baseball team that's a baseball team that wins and wins regularly and actually shows up in the playoffs on a regular basis. And we don't have to like embrace the poor us loserdom aspect of Chicago. That's some of its worst.
A friend of mine put this on Facebook when the Cubs won. And I thought this was so interesting. I'd never thought about it this way, but the Cubs taught us that it's that you can lose and still be loved.
Sure, that's
I thought
great.
That was kind of embrace interesting. Your, like, yeah, but I also think that, like, you know, sports is all about winning, and you know, I as a Sox fan am one that will buy into the idea, if you don't put a good product on the field, I'm not coming to the game.
Right.
But there is something about Chicago Cubdom and what the Cubs bring to sport that almost goes against the grain, this idea that you don't have to win. It's okay not to win. We still love you.
Sometimes we're going to tear up an airport in the middle of the night. It's just what happens here.
It's just
here.
What we do. I mean, you know, things happen. Yeah, no, I agree. And I think, you know, I heard someone say something similar, and it was this idea of little kids right now kind of having that consciousness and not making it to the point of being an adult where you already believe they're a not winning team. Like, if you're little enough to, but old enough to remember this, but still little enough to not have all that baggage of that scarcity kind of mindset, that it will be interesting to grow up with this idea of possibility in a way, you know, around sports.
Yeah, if you're an older teenager, you might have some memories of the White Sox winning the World Series and the Cubs winning the World Series.
Right.
Like, that's and the Blackhawks.
Right.
And, well, maybe not the Bears. But, you know, right. You've got all of this, you know, you've got a sports championship city, you know, for the most
You have
part.
Possibility. You right. have, you know, this like, a greater sense of hope than someone who's maybe a little bit older
right.
who saw, like, a not winning
This
streak.
Idea that this team said, we're not going to be burdened by goats and curses
right.
and you know, guys grabbing the ball, you know, out of play. That's not going to be a part of our narrative, and we're going to create our own, is something that would be 50 years from now, be nice for people to point to this year and be like, and that's the year we stopped doing that.
There you go. That's well said. I mean, the concept of the 50, 100, 500 years, I mean, when you think about what it means, I mean, from a Chicago standpoint, I think it'll be the week that the Cubs won the World Series. But I think from a purely sport standpoint, I think people will remember Game 7 of the 2016 World Series. If you're not a Cubs fan and you're not an Indians fan, you did see something that doesn't normally happen, a very competitive, very intense Game 7 of a World Series.
I'm a Sox fan. I'm not even that into sports, and I got super caught up in it. I mean, I finished a bottle of bourbon. It was very stressful.
It all started this week, too, if you think about it. It all started with last weekend, a World Series, just complete domination of a World Series weekend at Wrigley Field. One of the things that also came out, which I think is very interesting, is how much money this all cost. The idea of like being able to excise these demons and be able to be there to honor your past and your family's past is going to cost you $4,000 a ticket.
Mm-hmm.
That's a little weird. What do you got for the story? Now, you said in the break, maybe Cubs is not the story of the week?
No, I think Cubs is the story of the week. No, I think it is. And I think it's the underlying narratives under it, right? Those I'm going to say that again without saying under twice. The underlying narratives there with it, that it's about winning, that it's about hope, that it's about all these other things. And, you know, like you said, Scott, if you're an older teenager, you can have a memory of a Blackhawks Stanley Cup and a White Sox, you know, and a Cubs both having a World Series win. And I think that's just an interesting thing, because if you think about the fire narrative that we are so attached to in this town, it is not about the events leading up to the fire.
Mm-hmm.
And gosh darn it, it took us so long to get to that fire.
Right.
It's about the Chicago story very often starts with the fire and the rebuilding and we built this on top of rubble. And we, you know, that's where Chicago, even though we were around long before the fire, that's where we often start that story. And I think that we need to remember that and go forward accordingly, because it's really about, like, bigger metaphors that were unearthed as a result of this World Series.
So maybe this week what will be remembered is metaphors.
Yeah. Or similes.
And
who knows?
And
there might be some like or as.
Maybe an idiom.
Know. The Cubs winning World Series is like.
And let's be
Chicago
real.
After the
I
fire.
Think this week is the not the information we don't have this week is what's memorable. Mm-hmm. It is the week before we know something very big about the next president of the United States, and that's who it's going to be.
Right.
And it's been, you know, a lot of people that were feeling very confident about one candidate are suddenly not as confident, feeling like polls are doing this and polls are doing that. And, you know, polls are like, don't just focus, everybody. We're almost there.
You know, for you, as we look forward, as we say the week is ending, and that includes the weekend, do you figure in any more sort of surprise moments, gotchas, scandals,
totally.
Things that might happen before Tuesday?
We are far from rock bottom here.
I just, you know, you're at this point, what God, I'm not going to curse this by saying what else, but you know, you're sort of expecting Monday something's going to happen. I mean, we just had this injunction against Trump and Roger Stone,
yeah.
Because the judge in Ohio said that they were essentially, through their rhetoric, disenfranchising voters by saying, go down there and watch people. So, I mean, this has just happened today. So, I mean, it's entirely possible that we're going to see some more stuff like that coming out on Monday. And yeah, so, you know, hunker down. You know, you got a couple more days. I'm just going to work in the yard. I'm just going to go rake the leaves. I can't. I got to have nature.
Sing in the gutters if you
rake the leaves. Rake the leaves.
I mean, I agree. I think it's going to be a really interesting time. I think the possibility of much more going. We have a lot that's stirred up. Emotions are really high right now because everybody's just kind of got this sense of fatigue. And everybody's just kind of like, let's just find out. Let's just do this. And we're at a time when we're not talking. We're not, the conversations we're having are not about let's create space to have a conversation, even though we know we don't agree with each other. We're all about a big tug of war game. No, yeah. I'm right. And it's wearing people out. And I think when we're in that state, you know, people, you know, that's when irrationality can occur and erratic behavior.
Do you think that after the election, it's going to be easier to create that space for that conversation? Or do you still think it's going to be too pitched?
I think it's going to be too pitched. I think it needs a cooling off period. It needs to go to timeout. Everybody needs to go to timeout. We need to hug it out. No, I think we need...
just in time for Thanksgiving, right?
Oh, I don't think we're... I think it might be a couple of years, if not longer. Wow. I think we've unearthed a lot of things that ultimately are going to be better for having been unearthed, right? We've brought up a lot of big issues with this election cycle. We're talking about sexism and racism and xenophobia and big things that we haven't talked about in this powerful or mainstream of a way in a very long time. So I think ultimately it's going to be good, but I don't think we're on the upswing yet. I think we're still on the downswing. I think there's more to go before we get there.
Amy Guth at WGN Radio. You can hear it at the Saturday Night Special as well as the Business Lunch on Saturdays. Also her podcast with Rex Hupke from the Chicago Tribune. She's also a filmmaker. Scott Smith, who's our media contributor here at The Download. You can also follow him on Twitter at Our Man in Chicago. Both breaking down the week that was, reloading this week's news. Amy, Scott, thanks for being here, guys.
Good to be here.
We're the Cubbies. 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. What a day here in Chicago. The Cubs victory parade. So many people. I'll say millions. It sounds so formal, right? Millions. It sounds very Dr. Evil. But we'll talk about millions of Chicagoans, people from around the country, really, coming together today for the rally, but also continuing in Wrigleyville. Saw reports that the bars are packed up in Wrigleyville. They're getting ready. I mean, it really is. I mean, this is an emotional time for those fans. They need to let loose, right, Pete? They got to get out there and they gotta, you know, give it all. And because really at the end of the day, they can't believe they won the World Series. And one of the guys that can't believe that he won the World Series is the biggest Cub fan we know here on The Download. The Download's regular Cub fan, Todd Voorhees, and he's on the line right now from Wrigleyville. Todd Voorhees, how are you, my man?
Thanks, Justin. Really great. I'm just really overcome with emotion, and okay. But everything's good. I'm in a vestibule in the back of Irish Eyes, and you know, life is good. It's good.
Okay. Well, all right. I know you're emotional, so why don't we get to it?
is Facebook Live on now? Hang on one second. This is where I'm crying for everybody on Facebook Live. I went on today onto LinkedIn and I endorsed CEO Epstein for Microsoft Excel. I wore the same clothes. Dave Matthews.
All right, there we go. Calm yourself. It really looks like you're getting swept up here, Todd, along with the thousands, if not millions, of fans. I know it's emotional, but tell us a little bit about the scene in Wrigleyville, what you're seeing.
Yeah, the rally was awesome. I mean, there's a lot of Coors Light and Red Solo cups, you know, but there's a lot of traffic. I got stuck at Union Station.
Because the commute. Where were you commuting? I thought you lived at, where were you commuting to?
No, I just love that Quarter Bakery. The lemon bars are good. Super long lines, though.
All right. Okay. Todd Voorhees.
I just got two likes on Facebook Live and one heart and a wow symbol.
Todd Voorhees. All right, you got to keep it together here. I know you can't hold it. Okay. All right, so let's talk about what I mean. It was a magical day. It was a magical day for you. Talk about what you saw, not only at the rally, but in Wrigleyville tonight.
Yeah, I mean, it was a magical day in Wrigleyville. You just can't describe it. You're seeing fans hugging each other, flashing their chests for Harry, flashing their chests for Ernie. I mean, we still party at Yahtzee's, and we still close the night at Tysdell 4, but Tysdell 4 is no longer the same. It's not the same. It's not the same Tysdell 4.
Todd, talk us through what you're going through, buddy. What are you going through here?
I'm crying for all the beers and wings and all the times I called it sick and all those W flags I bought over the years. So much. And crying for the one time I saw Sean Dunstan at the gas station on Rand Road. And then I went into this movie theater with puke on my jacket. And then I made a noise like, bleh, bleh. Then I dropped it all over the side. And people in the audience started getting sick. And I never felt so bad in my entire life.
All right. Todd, that's just the scene from Goonies where Chunk spills his guts to the Fratellis.
People just don't get it, Justin. You know, Cardinals fans don't get when we have bags tournaments on Jeff Field on Tuesdays, and Mets fans don't get it when we wait in line outside in February with no jacket at Barleycorns, and Royals fans don't get it why we petition Rom to lift the public urination ban for Parents Weekend, and even Sox don't get why Nuts on Clark has its company name in quotes. You just have to be here.
All right, Todd. You've been on the show a lot. I've had you on a lot. I know you're a big account exec with Duraflame. You're a real Wrigleyville success story, but I've never heard you like this.
I'm even going to give up locker room talk for Lent.
All right, well, it's not Lent. Not even close.
I just wish my dad was here to see this.
Oh, well. I'm sorry, Todd. I didn't know that your dad had passed.
You know, he just lives in Willowbrook, and he doesn't like to leave the house.
All right.
Crash into me. Well, boy's dream.
Todd Voorhees, the resident download Cubs fan, partying in Wrigleyville. Very emotional tonight. Todd, thanks for joining us. Thanks for breaking down your feelings.
Thanks for having me. Bye, Duraflame. Wintertime slow burn logs this holiday season.
All right. So fun to have Todd Voorhees on, the Wrigleyville resident download Cub fan, also known by his stage name, Sandy Marshall. I love that character. He does a good job. And the tears, so many tears. I'm glad he got to Facebook Live it, though. That was important.
Yeah, I can't wait. I'm going to go watch that.
I love the likes. So many thanks for all the thumbs and the hearts, and the likes and the hearts that float by. That's good stuff. All right. So coming up, Mark Carman is going to join us. We're going to talk about what happened tonight at the United Center. The New York Knicks came to town to take on our Chicago Bulls. The Knicks led by some kid named Derrick Rose and his best friend Joakim Noah. And the Knicks came in and made a statement. Not good. Won that game by 15 or so. Pretty much led all season long or all game long in the way that not what you want to see. But it was fun seeing those guys back at the UC. Would like to see more out of our new players as well as some of the returning guys. But we'll talk with Carr about that.
Justin, your high score tonight for the New York Knickerbockers, Kristaps Porzingis. 27 points.
They were feeding him all day long. He needs it. He's such a skinny guy.
Good old Chris Stapps.
What about on the Bulls side? Who led? Do you know? Like, who were the Bulls?
Well, with the newly formatted NBA.com, give me just a second to refamiliarize myself here. Thank you, NBA. D-Wade, 35.
35?
Jimmy Butler, 26.
All right. And then nobody.
And then nobody else.
And nobody else.
Yeah.
I was able to look out of the corner of my eye during the last segment, and I saw a couple of, like, rebound tussles with Noah and Gibson. I was like, oh, that's fun. That's fun those two are in different teams. And then Derrick Rose doing number 25, which is weird. What is that? What's 25? What is that?
And then that big, huge acquisition, Rajon Rondo, poured in 4.
Yeah, well, that's about right. Yeah. He's saving himself for when we got to play the Kings. When it's on the line for Rajon, when he's got to play his old team, he brings it on. But he doesn't care about the Knicks.
It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio with me, Mark Carman now at the Carm on Twitter. What a day for WGN Radio Sports, for sports fans, for Cubs fans. It'd be one thing if it was just celebrating the biggest moment in Chicago sports history, which was today with the victory parade. But there also was some drama and some tension at the UC tonight as two Chicago draft picks come back to Chicago. Two number ones, Derrick Rose and Joakim Noah, come back with the New York Knicks for their first game in a different uniform. Mark Carman, how are you, man?
I'm great, Justin. Thanks for having me. I am coming live from the United Center where...
What a long day.
I mean, I don't know if anybody cares about what's going on over there right now when the Cubs just had their pennant, or their World Series celebration.
You can't even get it right in your head.
Right? Did they win the World Series? Did that actually happen? I think they did. So, but it was a big night on the hard court, I guess, with Rose and Noah both back in town. They had a video tribute that they combined, so they'd go Rose highlight, Noah highlight, Rose highlight, Noah highlight, which was to the benefit of Derrick Rose because they love Noah, Bulls fans. But Bulls fans
really
just killing Derrick Rose tonight. Every time he touched it, at least for a good part of the first quarter, boo. Hardcore boos. I'm like, didn't this guy grow up here, the youngest MVP in the history of the NBA? Okay, he got hurt, and maybe didn't come back as soon as you wanted him to. But, I mean, come on. You're really hating him to this level. And I know he's had a rough summer off the court. But, by the way, found innocent on a civil case. And, overly told the truth on that one.
Beyond that, I can't see a chorus of boos coming off of a civil case that you know didn't have anything to do with basketball. What is it about the way that the Bulls fans respond to Derrick Rose? Is it the fact that there was all this potential, there was this moment when the knee injuries, and he didn't come back, and all that kind of stuff?
I think that's basically it, right? They just hold him. Apparently, they hold him accountable for that group never getting over the top, right? That Noah and Powell and Taj and Jimmy, whoever else you want to throw in there, Lou Aldang back in the day.
Carlos Boozer.
Right, him too. That they never got over the hump. I mean, I do, you know, it's been 18 years now since Mike left. They've been to the Eastern Conference Finals once. It was with Derrick Rose. He had a game winner against LeBron the year before, not last, but the year before. They were up 2-1. LeBron hits a corner three, and then that basically ends that era of Bulls basketball,
right.
Really.
I'm fascinated to think about the villains in Chicago sports history when you think about guys, especially guys that are from Chicago that, Derrick Rose, and we've had this conversation before, but really was a poster child for the Chicago Bulls. He brought Chicago Bulls basketball back. There was that time with Kirk Heinrich and Ben Gordon and that kind of thing where you're like, this is not getting out of the second round ever.
Right.
And Derrick Rose came on the scene, but what has happened to him since? I mean, it's almost, if I dare say, on sort of a Sammy Sosa level where there's some weird kind of fan hatred of Derrick Rose that's hard to understand.
That's not bad. I mean, and with Sammy, it's like, well, he cheated. Yeah, okay, well, yeah, he did, but you all went crazy for him when he was hitting 60 bombs three separate seasons. So it's just convenient how everybody forgets that when he came to the plate, they'd go nuts. Sammy. But now, I hate Sammy Sosa. Do you really? Do you remember how you were towards that guy?
Is it the same concept with Derrick Rose?
And with Derrick, right. I mean, he put the Bulls back on the map. The guy, in his first ever playoff game, he's up there with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar history-wise. He had like 36 and 10 or 11 assists against the Celtics in that crazy seven-game series where Noah had the dunk on the breakaway. Mm-hmm. The guy was beloved, and he got hurt, tried to take care of his own body. People had huge judgments on that. And now he comes back, his first game back, and you're going to boo him every time he touches.
The team did a tribute video for him.
Yeah.
The team and Derrick Rose are on bad footing.
Right. Well, and so, you know, they're showing this video, and I'm like, Is anybody enjoying this other than me? I mean, at least the Rose part. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I hold him to a lower standard than other people do. But I mean, to me, here's a kid that comes out of the inner city, is a genius at his craft, is, you know, before he got hurt, top 20 player in the world. So that's probably more successful than you are at your job. He makes more money than 99.999% of us. He came from nothing. Most of us don't come from there. And to get to that level, to hold him on this, to judge him like he's this failure, it's like, if he's a failure...
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to look in the mirror, you know?
Well, let's talk about what happened on the court. Joakim Noah also back. The Knicks they handled the Bulls tonight. And the Bulls started the season 3-0. They had a good look, and obviously no one was paying attention thanks to a Chicago Cubs run for World Series. But the last two games, we're seeing more of what we thought we would see with the Chicago Bulls, which is missing a lot of shots, heavy production from one or two guys, but not really playing team basketball.
No, but I'll tell you, this Dwayne Wade guy.
Yeah.
33 minutes tonight, 35 points, 12 of 20 from the field, 5 of 7 from 3. I mean,
which is way out of his average. That's not what we thought we were getting with Dwayne Wade. But why? What was it tonight that ultimately doomed the Bulls?
They couldn't guard. I mean, and the Knicks put up 117. Noah himself, that's his best offensive game I've seen him have in a while. He's finishing a ton of balls around the hoop that normally, at least in recent years, Joakim has no lift and can't even make a layup. He made a bunch of them tonight at 16, 7 of 11 from the field. I mean, last year, for a big man, even more pathetic, I think he shot 39%. So in the last game before this one, I saw he played 18 minutes, shot 0 of 2. So this was a big breakout for Joakim. He was extremely motivated tonight. I mean, he was a wild man out there. And I'm watching him walk off the court like I kind of waited in the tunnel when they come off. That body, man, it's taking a beating. He doesn't walk great.
And there was, when he touched the ball, there were no boos?
No, they love Noah.
Wow,
love
so
Noah.
Interesting.
They love Noah because they look at Noah like he's a warrior. And they look at Rose like he's just soft, paper mache, all that. It's the Chicago
and
toughness,
even though Joakim Noah missed all last year, pretty much, with an injury.
Right, but they look at, I think Bulls fans look at that like those were real injuries, and Rose was just, you know, cleared by doctors, faker. And also, Derek, his words are...
He's not a wizard with... He may be a wizard with the basketball, not so much with the media.
Right. And Joakim was great with the media.
Yeah.
Phenomenal.
He'd also throw out some great stuff about the Cavs and give us some sound bites that we wanted.
Right? That too. I don't know anybody who likes to go to Cleveland, that type of stuff. And then I play for the guy in the last row.
Yeah.
I play for the garbage man, the postal worker. I like repping this city. All that stuff. I mean, people hear that.
Now, Joakim Noah obviously motivated tonight. Porzingis as well had a huge game. Talk about, you know, those are interior players, and that's been something that you think about with this new-look Chicago Bulls team. I mean, it seemed like they were banging bodies. It did seem like they were putting some balls back in the basket on the on sort of second-chance points. Is that going to be a problem for the Chicago Bulls moving forward?
I mean, I just don't expect the Bulls to be really in the mix. But I guess, you know, as far as what you're talking about banging down low, I mean, Robin Lopez is okay. I mean, that's...
Taj seemed to be kind of...
Taj...
Exposed a little bit tonight, maybe,
right,
with Joakim Noah.
I mean, those guys are super tight, and that's... I don't know what that was like for Taj to play against him tonight, but I'm guessing it was pretty uncomfortable. And you're exactly right, though. Outside of those two, I mean, Nico Mirotic ain't going to be mixing up in the paint. Felicio's not bad, and neither is as far as just pure physicality. And I guess Bobby Portis could get in there and be slightly physical, although in my mind he's a little undersized and doesn't have a position on this team. Because if you're going to play Taj and Mirotic at the four, well, then Portis is done.
Portis, right.
Right. So I mean, the physicality is not going to be there. You know, and the other thing tonight, this Jimmy Butler character.
Oh, we didn't even talk about Jimmy.
I mean, he really wants to have that basketball in his hands, and when he gets it, the offense just stops. And he's, you know, Rondo will be dribbling, and oh, there's Jimmy 1 foot away from him calling for it. Hey, Jimmy, perhaps I'm sure that Fred Hoiberg's not exactly, that can't be how the offense is scripted. So it's still interesting. I still think Jimmy's got something to figure out. I mean, Wade, though, you know, you look at his numbers here. I mean, 35-10, that's impressive. But he was also minus 23, which I don't put a whole lot into that. But
what does that mean, minus 23?
When he was on the court, the Bulls were outscored by 23 points. By far and away the most on the team.
Is he not playing defense?
He was not playing defense tonight at all.
I mean, he's on Carmelo Anthony, right?
Well, tonight he had Courtney Lee, and Courtney Lee didn't miss a shot in the first half, and he finished with he was 8 of 10 from the field, had 17. So he was a very, as they like to say in the old NBA nowadays, the NBA analysis, he was very efficient.
Mark Garman in studio. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk a little bit more about Chicago sports. We have to wrap up today, get your thoughts on the 2016 victory parade, but not just the parade. Also talk about this 2016 season and frankly about the short term and the long term for the Cubs coming up. Mark Garman in studio. We'll be right back. Big day in sports today, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin, Mark Garman in studio. Obviously, I mean, we were talking about the Bulls, and we'll leave that be because it's November. Really don't start talking seriously about basketball till after Christmas, right?
I'll just throw one little nugget out there. Northwestern played an exhibition game tonight.
Oh, it starts.
The Cats 89, Illinois Springfield 52. Just a name to throw out there that you heard on the Justin Coffin show first. Isaiah Brown. He's a short little point guard slash off guard. 7 for 11 tonight in his first game.
Let me ask you this. I mean, we saw.
And what was the name of the high school team they played again?
Oh, Martyr, don't need your negativity, bro. Don't need that negativity right now when Isaiah Brown goes for 18 in his first ever exhibition game on 7-11. I've got inside information that the Cats love him. Damn it. No one's giving
you
that cat knowledge, Martyr.
I think this is pretty good. You know, now that the Cubs have gotten rid of that curse, it's Wildcats basketball time. They've never been in the NCAA tournament. They're one of the only teams that haven't.
This is the year. I can feel it.
This could be, I mean, just think about what we're in the golden age of Chicago sports. Today, a tremendous rally. Pete and I were watching the rally on Fox, and then we turned it to NBC, then to GN. We were trying to figure out like where it was because I personally thought there was a problem with miking the audience. Like they would say, "Ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together for whoever came up to this, to Anthony Rizzo," and they're smattering of applause. But talking to you just before, that's kind of how it was.
Well, you know, okay, so there was the stage, and then there was like this media area, and then there were all the people. I'm looking out, right, like everybody else. There is a sea of humanity.
Millions.
Millions. Yet, whenever anybody kind of got on stage, I was expecting these massive roars, and there was
like
just
the old Bulls or the Blackhawks. When the Blackhawks, oh my God, when Patrick Kane gets called up, it's on.
Right. And there was none of that. So
that's so hard to believe. Why? Was it hard to hear? Was it why would you go stand in all those lines and get ready at 8 o'clock in the morning to go down there if you're not going to scream and yell every time they say a name you recognize?
Yeah, I didn't really get it. I was like, what's going on here? Why isn't there more? And then it just kind of, okay, we're all going to sing Go Cubs Go to a country song and then everyone's going to go home and nothing. And then, of course, 5 hours afterwards, you know, I came back to the station, then I take the L back up to Wrigley. I get off at Wrigley to get my car. People are hammered. They're having the greatest time ever. They're blowing horns. It's like it's a game day. I'm like, where was this downtown? You know, you all were there. And, you know, people were walking around at 8 a.m. They're carrying their 12 packs of Bud Light just strolling down Sheffield. I'm like, this is going to be a wild day. Y'all are nuts.
So maybe they figured it out. If I want to get wild, I go to Wrigleyville. If I want to go downtown and just kind of do the golf clap,
yeah,
I'll go to Hutchinson Field.
I guess Grant Park was the golf clappers. But, I mean, that's a lot of golf clappers.
I know. And you know, there's such a great tradition. I mean, obviously the Blackhawks have made it a very modern tradition. But when you think back to the Chicago Bulls and they would have those trophy presentations and rallies at Petrillo, and they'd introduce Michael Jordan or Scottie Pippen or Phil Jackson. Place would go crazy.
Right. It should have been like, Rizzo, Rizzo. Right. I mean, where is that? Give me a Dexter chant. Give me a Javi chant. Right. I was sitting there like, should we do this at Wrigley and just limit it to the 40,000 who actually are going to give effort here? There was no effort. Poor crowd effort today. I think great effort getting there.
I was going to say, but how was when it comes to just the logistics and everything? I mean, there's so many people downtown today. I mean, from your vantage point as being a media guy and working through it, I mean, were the players just, were they taken care of? And secondly, could you sense the awe?
I don't know how you did it. if you didn't, like for me, I started in Wrigleyville. I was there super early this morning, and I had an outstanding report on Steve Cochran's show, and he screamed at me because I was telling him that, you know, there's no media parking, and he's just like, he thought that I was, you know, all about myself. I was trying to actually mocking the media, but there's neither here nor there, Steve. Just
you've been waiting on that for like 15 hours.
Just crushing on me. So that was, and then, you know, so then I was on a rooftop down there, right? And all the double-decker buses are out, and it seemed like there was a ton of people down there. But so then I tried to go downtown to get to the platform. Well, I had, like, the media credential. So I was able to get through barriers that other people weren't, but it was, you couldn't go anywhere. If you got there late, you were not getting there. And so there was just, I mean, Columbus Drive was just lined with people, and Michigan Avenue was stuffed with people. So that sea of humanity, and there were
I was down there. We did the little mini documentary we did at the top of the show, because where I was at the beginning of Lakeshore Drive, where they came off. So they come off of Lakeshore Drive, and they're right there in front of Bloomingdale's and right there. To see it on their faces, you know, where they just were on Lakeshore Drive, and they hit that sea of humanity, because if you look down Michigan Avenue all the way down here to the river, and you're just seeing bodies and bodies, you could see, like, Dexter Fowler and Aroldis Chapman and even Joe Maddon just being like, everyone started pulling out their phones to be like, what is this? Like, this, it was a moment for them.
Yeah, I think the parade route was the favorite for everybody. The Grant Park thing was completely anticlimactic. Okay, they're here. Now they're gone. Clap, clap. All right, let's all go back to Wrigley. And
there seemed to be, and it might be just the size of, maybe it's the size of the roster, but there is something with the Blackhawks that, you know, you see Foley and company just kind of going, ladies and gentlemen, here he is, the captain, Jonathan Toews, and the place goes crazy. This was, Pat Hughes did alphabetical. So Jake Arrieta's coming out second. You're like, what? Wait, whoa. What is he up second? No one did a scorecard to put the stars towards the end?
Right. That wasn't particularly well done either. I love Pat Hughes. The man's phenomenal at his job. But when he gets up there and he's like, Chicago Cubs baseball is on the air. Like, we were expecting this big roar.
Yeah, right.
And it fell completely flat. Like,
I still believe there's amplification issues. I won't blame it on Cub Nation. I believe it was just bad microphone placement.
Hey guys, let me ask you this. You both were out there. I only saw it via the television. How fast were they going in those buses? It seemed to me that when they got to the biggest part, the biggest sections along the parade route, they were still going at a pretty good clip.
I will say this, from where I was at on Michigan Avenue, the whole thing was over in 30 seconds.
Right.
You're absolutely right. Because the first half of the parade was just executives and friends and family that didn't have any face recognition. It started with Tom Ricketts about halfway through. And you're like, here they come. This is going to be a craze. It's going to be like at the pace of like a Columbus Day parade or a gay pride parade where you're like, here come the floats and they're moving, but they're moving slow. Nah, they just rolled through and you're like, there goes Rizzo. Oh, it's over. Cops.
Yeah,
no,
I mean,
that's
the vibe that I got watching it on TV.
It was a lot of waiting to see it for 30 seconds.
That's another thing. I'd like to perhaps take calls on the download all night on that. How do you actually make that much effort to go out there just for that 30 seconds where you wave? They have no idea
who
you
are. Million people there, yeah.
Yeah, they have no idea who you are. They don't care. And yet, you're willing to make that move just because you want to be a part of it. I think that's cool. That's beautiful.
To be able to
crazy.
See those heroes, the ones that you watched on TV, to watch Anthony Rizzo go by sort of waving in a general direction of you, there's something special about it. When you see an Aroldis Chapman or a Joe Maddon, or trying to think of like John Lackey and John Lester. Lester, Ross, and Lackey were on the back of one of the buses, and they were really the three with their cans, their aluminum cans of Bud Light, you know. Like, they're just like with their hats backwards and their aviators on. There was a point where you could physically see John Lester turn to David Ross and be like, this is crazy. I think that's what he said. This is crazy. And to be that close and be able to see that, I think that's why people go down.
Okay, and at the end of the day, I mean, what else are you going to do? And there's all the connection of everybody else out there. You got all the Cub fans, I get it. It's just there's something about, I just feel like so in some way the fans deserve more than that.
There are still people aimlessly walking around on Michigan Avenue. So that tells you that there was a tremendous amount of that all day. If you were outside at all, it was all day kind of, let's walk all the way down there. Let's turn around and walk back here. They were trying to get their money's worth. So
it's like the Walking Dead out there, man.
It was very Walking Dead. Mark Garman in studio. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll get Rob Martier's update tonight. And we come back, let's talk about the highlights of the 2016 season. And I'm very interested to see if the Cubs have a shot at some of the hardware. Of course, the Cy Young, MVP, Manager of the Year, Executive. And, of course, what are we going to do with some of the contracts and free agents? Mark Garman in studio. Stay with us. They should get a Lil Wayne Cubs verse for this. You know, like he should do a verse just to make it really an authentic mashup. Mark Garman in studio with me. We're talking about the big day in Chicago sports, little Bulls, a little victory parade. But really the story, of course, is the 2016 Chicago Cubs, a team that on Wednesday night finished it off in dramatic fashion, a Game 7 win. This team, I mean, as we sort of look back and we wrap up what this team means to Chicago, I mean, let's go right to the where we left off in 2015, which was a loss to the Mets, and the decisions that were made in the offseason to bring in some parts obviously paid off.
Yeah, the biggest one was spring training, right? Nobody thought that they were going to get their leadoff man and their center fielder back, and then here comes Theo Epstein walking Dexter Fowler out, and Jason Hayward, who played like American Legion ball with him in high school, gives him a big hug, and the rest of his teammates go nuts, and then all of a sudden you've got your leadoff man and center fielder back, and it moves Hayward off over to right, which is where it should be. So that was huge. And, you know, John Lackey, a little veteran presence, he had a pretty good year, too.
And he did show presence. I mean, he was a larger-than-life pitcher for the Cubs. I mean, he gave a lot of good performances throughout the year, but he was there when you needed him.
He had an excellent year. And he wasn't great in the playoffs, but that guy was worth the money all day.
And then the one we haven't even talked about, which is the World Series MVP, Ben Zobrist.
Oh, well. And
made a tremendous speech today about wanting to come to Chicago because this would top the experience he had in Kansas City.
Yeah, that's it's funny. I didn't even think of Ben Zobrist going through it. I thought you were about to say Jason Hayward. I'm like, we talked about Hayward. Oh right, yeah, Ben Zobrist, 4 years, $56 million, and they traded Starlin Castro, which was a huge move in the offseason for Adam Warren, who's now back with the Yankees, and in the old Aroldis Chapman flip around. So that trade, man,
well,
huge.
It shows, I mean, there's two signing things. Let's talk about Theo Epstein, because it shows two things. Obviously, the trade to get a lot of talent in the farm system, to bring that farm system, Addison Russell trade will always be known as one of the highway robberies to be able to bring him in. Also, you saw Kyle Hendricks for Ryan Dempster. Those stories have become huge, but you've seen Theo Epstein work in ways that we haven't seen past Cub management work, where free agency pickups are contributing in October, November, not to mention trade deadline guys. Mike Montgomery, Aroldis Chapman coming in at the trade deadline, that's how you pull to be able to get guys for the stretch run.
Yeah, and he's just opportunistic, right? Like, oh, Ben Zobrist is a free agent. That makes sense. How do we do this financially? Well, we're going to have to trade Starlin Castro away. Okay, and so we're going to get that done and take less for what Castro's worth just to get the money to work. Oh, we can go out and get Dexter Fowler, who will come. Well, I got to save money here because, you know, the finances, they're not as open, at least they haven't been, as, you know, maybe some people think. Oh, I got to trade Chris Coughlin and his $5 million to Oakland for nothing just to open up the dollars to bring in Dexter Fowler. So I'll do that too. He's just very creative, right? And he makes reasonable plays. Like, oh, 20, and it, I wouldn't have done this, and this is maybe his one mistake, but just the way he thinks, 26-year-old Jason Hayward's available. Right? Okay, this is a guy that plays great defense. He can run the bases, and he's entering his prime. Guys like that rarely become available, so let's make a play on Hayward. Jake Arrieta, this guy's got number one stuff. We're looking for pitching. I'm going to take a flyer on Scott Feldman, and I mean, that's unbelievable.
Well, let's talk about what it means. I mean, obviously, this team coming together, a lot of rookies from Jorge Soler to Kyle Schwarber to Chris Bryant, guys who've come up in the system and were brought up at this year. We saw it with Wilson Contreras, which was kind of a little bit of a surprise, but he came on and he became such an important part. This team is really stacked. I mean, to have a manager like Joe Maddon to be able to move people around, they don't necessarily have three go-to outfielders. They have five. They have six. How do they balance when a Kyle Schwarber is healthy? I mean, are we going to see an exit because the World Series win is under our belts and they can't afford when these guys come clean? I mean, is it Blackhawk style when it comes to the Cubs?
Well, see, that's interesting too, Justin, because when guys are coming up and they're looking for an opportunity, well, okay, fine, I'll play all over and I'll accept my role. But now if you're Javi Baez and you've had success, you probably want to play every day. And Kyle Schwarber wants to play every day. And Ben Zobrist wants to play every day. And Jason Hayward wants to play every day.
Chris Bryant, right.
Well, right, and Chris Bryant will play every day. But so some of these guys, if they keep the team basically as is, they're going to have to sacrifice at bats. And how and position too. Ben Zobrist came over here, one of the selling points for him was that he wasn't going to have to move around and he's going to play second base. Well, once Javi took off, he didn't play second base at all.
No.
So he's in left field. Well, where are you going to play Schwarber? Well, you're going to play Kyle Schwarber in left. So what are you going to do with Zobrist? Well, you're going to play him in right? Well, you got
to... you and me talking right here, you automatically think, well, someone's going to have to move. I mean, someone is going to get moved in the offseason. I mean, I don't think that you can... I mean, a lot of people would say, yeah, it's obvious. It's Jason Hayward. It's a big contract, and there's not a lot of suitors out there looking for a Jason Hayward deal. It seems like Theo Epstein may be stuck with a Jason Hayward. So what do you see this offseason when it comes to attrition or the idea of subtraction?
Well, I think a couple things could happen. Number one, I mean, my guess is that Fowler won't be back. So now you've got...
He sounded like it today. That was a see you later speech.
Right. I mean, I was like, is that about this? Or are you just talking about speaking? I don't know. Whatever. It doesn't even matter. Most likely the guy's going to be gone. And that's going to hurt because, I mean, they were a lot better with him in the lineup. So there are some at-bats out there. Can Albert Elmora Jr. step in and be an everyday center fielder? Probably not. So does that mean that perhaps a guy like Javi could be playing center
field?
Could
you move Jason Hayward to center like the plan was and then be able to do Soler and Schwarber on the corners?
And you could do that.
Where's Zobrist play? This is like a game. This is like a puzzle.
I think Soler will get traded. I think he's out. But I think you could do, in theory, Hayward in center and Zobrist in right and Schwarber in left. But it's not a very good outfit.
Where is... And we got to take a break in a second, but where is the weakness for this team? If you were Theo Epstein, you just won a World Series, where are you looking to improve? I mean, is it pretty much a stretch that Aroldis Chapman comes back? I mean, where are the spots that we may see some movement in the offseason?
Yeah. I mean, I think the back end of the bullpen is something they'll focus on. I also think they're always looking for pitching, right? There's another wild card out there, and I don't think they're going to trade Jake Arrieta. But Jake Arrieta is a free agent at the end of next year. Let's just say, hypothetically, things don't go particularly well next season. I don't think that'll be the case. I'm predicting them to repeat. But if they don't...
Trade deadline, you might see some chips, yeah.
Yeah, and you're talking about how do you move Jason Hayward. Well, when you deal a guy like Arrieta, and maybe you're not going to get a whole lot of value because you're dealing him at the deadline and it's a half of a season of control... Maybe you could package somebody like Jason Hayward with him if Hayward continues to struggle. I'm way out in front.
I was going to say we're way out. We're like, okay, so next year when the Cubs are out of it at the trading deadline,
right? Which is
on
not
the day that they have the hit super the World Series victory party. I love it.
None of that's happening.
I love it.
But
none of it's happening. I love it. That's so good. All right, let's take a quick break. Mark Carman in studio. We're talking Cubs. We'll wrap up. I'm interested in what your predictions are for the hardware.
All right.
All right. Stay with us.
Bye bye, curse of 45. Drive a goat on up to Wrigley and we'll let it inside. These good old boys are gonna give it a try. Singing, this could be the year the curse dies. This could be the year the curse dies.
Yeah, there we go.
Thank God.
We can put these away. What are you gonna do, Pete, next year? You're screwed. All these songs are all about the curse and you know, Cubs finally winning. Now they won. There's not much you can do with parody songs at this point. Right. Mark Carman in studio with me here as we wrap up. Coming up, Patty Vasquez will take over here at 11 o'clock. All right, so the hardware.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, obviously you don't count what happened in the postseason because that's a whole different thing. But, I mean, as of this moment, Cy Young, MVP, probably not Rookie of the Year, but Manager of the Year, Executive of the Year. What are you thinking for hardware for the Chicago Cubs?
Well, I think John Lester is going to win the Cy Young Award. I think that is he's got a great, great shot at it. And, I mean, Kyle Hendricks had a lower ERA, but I think overall Lester had a better year. I guess Max Scherzer is in there as well. But I think Lester's going to win the Cy Young.
Let me just say.
Yes.
If I were a voting member, I would take points off for not being able to throw to first base. I would just say it. I'm telling you, man. But they
got around it.
They did. It just we were talking about this the night of the World Series when you were in Cleveland. My wife watched the game for the first time. She got caught up in Cub fever, not into baseball. The text I got from her is like, why can't this guy throw to first base? I'm like, I don't know. I don't have the answer. It's psychological.
What's interesting too about the psychological part of that is this is a dude who thinks through everything.
It's so weird.
He's got a tight routine that he goes about every day. Total winner. But yet, he couldn't figure out how to throw to first base. Okay.
All right.
But
so say he's the guy. He's the odds-on favorite for Cy Young.
I think they get that award. I also think that Chris Bryant's going to win the MVP. So, I think the Cubs get both those awards. And Bryant, I mean,
hard to argue with his numbers, yeah.
He hits for power. He hits 300. He runs, tag up, score, huge play, double to the corner, racing around from first. His attitude is unbelievable. Off the field, the dude's a prince. I mean, he's really
hard to vote against.
I mean, this guy's like
who else in the league would be someone that you would look at in the National League for MVP?
The guy
in Colorado, the third baseman.
Well, first of all, you could start with Rizzo, right? I mean, it's unbelievable. That's one guy that you could
Bryant's
look at.
Bryant's got better numbers, but
Bryant does have better numbers. I think. Let's see.
Bryce Harper kind of fell off because they walk him every time.
Bryce Harper was in the mix, I guess, for a little while, but that's not happening. Hold on a second. I
just off the top of my head, as a baseball fan and knowing those players, I can't think of anyone who's up at Chris Bryant's level.
No, hold on. Let me pull up one number real fast.
You can pull up while I ask you about
Bryant leads the NL in WAR at 7.7. So Nolan Arenado, Freddie Freeman are at 6.5. Corey Seager, the Dodgers, 6.1. It's just not going to happen. So I mean, I think Bryant's a runaway. Rizzo's fifth.
Yeah, I mean, the only stars in the National League that you can really point to would be Bryce Harper because he makes a difference in the game. You know, because you got to pitch around him. And then maybe after that, it becomes really hard. Buster Posey, maybe, because he's such a important part of that Giants team. But I can't think of
12th in the National League in WAR at 4.7. You know, 17th. It's kind of interesting in left is Addison Russell.
That's a great year.
Fowler's 19th.
Wow. Okay, so when it comes to manager of the year, it's a long shot for Joe Maddon because he had such a stacked lineup.
Right. I think Dave Roberts gets it from the Dodgers. LA. Mattingly leaves, a lot of hubbub on that, and Roberts, you know, they end up winning the division, and I think it's probably Dave Roberts. I don't know exactly. I suppose you can make a case for Dusty Baker too, but I don't think he gets it. He's won it before, so I think Dave Roberts of the Dodgers will win it for the NL.
And then in terms of, I guess, the other awards, hardware, you know, when I think of any of the other awards, I mean, Rookie of the Year, I guess Wilson Contreras, but he's not really in the running. Is he as sort of a part-time catcher?
Corey Seager's a rookie? Is he not?
Oh, is he not? Okay, so yeah.
So I think that's your Rookie of the Year with LA.
Well, it's an amazing year. I mean, to think about it, it's funny because I wanted to kind of have an hour where we talked about the ups and downs of the Cubs season, but they won 103 games and then they won the World Series. There's not a lot of downs. I mean, there were a couple runs there maybe in the middle of the season where they lost two or three in a row, but
You had me like research some games, I was going back through it, just looking at it. I mean, they won on opening day 9-0, just to recall that. They won opening day 9-0. I mean, that's just, you know, hello. And then Arrieta threw a no-hitter on April 20th. First, okay, they beat the Reds 16-0 that day, for the record. That was nine starts after he threw a no-hitter against the Dodgers, which is the third shortest stretch. Got that note for you. I remember May 8th against the Nationals. They swept Dusty Baker out of town. It was Mother's Day. Javi Baez with the pink bat. in a 13-inning game. I was doing the beat on the weekend. I'm like, they're still going. I'm going to make it over there. I'm driving over to the game. Bias hits the home. I'm like, oh. I love extra innings. Anything can happen. There was the Bryant 5-for-5 game against the Reds in June. 3 homers, 2 doubles. Are you kidding me, Chris Bryant? You're insane. There was the Travis Wood play the outfield game, right? Woods, that was June 28th. He's in the outfield. Spencer Patton's involved somehow. And then Pedro Strop was playing left. And, like, you know, that was a crazy victory that somehow they pulled out in 15 innings. And then I thought actually the biggest win of the regular season was the last game before the All-Star break, where they had lost 5 in a row and they beat the Pirates 3-2. And that losing streak, and Chris Bryant had a couple huge hits in that game.
There you go. Oh, that was awesome. That was awesome. Mark Carmen, a tremendous year covering the Chicago Cubs, obviously, as well through the playoffs and the World Series. Get some rest.
Thank you.
And start boning up on the Bulls, I guess, right?
Yeah. I got the beat tomorrow at 3, so a lot of the interviews.
It's must listen to.
Yeah, well, we got a lot of interviews to play. That'll be some good stuff. And that picture I put out of me and Rob Zastrzyzny.
On the ground.
Yeah. That interview, I'm going to, when I replay that thing, I'm just going to sit here weeping. So
there you go.
We'll do it at the end of the show.
That's tomorrow, 3 o'clock. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago, WGNRadio.com. I want to thank Pete Zimmerman for doing a great job tonight as well on the edit for the Chicago Cubs sort of mini documentary we did at the top of the show, which is great, which will be online coming up after the show. Good job, Pete. It's good. Great week. Awesome to be here at WGN, being able to be a part of this tremendous World Series victory. Patty Vasquez coming up next.